Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Tuesday, April 26, 2022. Thank you for joining me today. Coming right back to it to get back to some stuff that I had to skim over at the end of the show yesterday. And I don't want to guarantee it, but I'm planning on trying to do another show right after this. I'm trying to work a way out that I can split this in different topics and jump right to the next one and have everything set up right after I'm done with this part of it. It's difficult. It's a lot that goes into the background, but I think I've got it squared away today for the most part. So if I do it, I'll let you know at the end of the show if I'm feeling up to it at the end. It should be like a maybe hopefully 5-10 minute different time barrier between when I start the next part of it. And on top of that, I want to make a quick point. This show is meant to be more about kind of everything I see that's out there that seems the most relevant. But of course, these topics lately have been so all-consuming. COVID-19, the Ukraine discussion, that's not by our design, right? That's the design of what these are supposed to be. It's overtaking everything. It's taking all the oxygen out of the room, and all these things do piece together. It's very interesting. There's a lot more going on than just Ukraine or just COVID or just a vaccine or just the Great Reset. There's a lot. Well, I would say even just the Great Reset, but that is a central part of it. The point being is the show going forward won't always be just hyper-focused on one topic. It ultimately could end up like that. I don't believe that'll happen. I think that these things are hyper-focused right now for a reason. And I do try to give things in the beginning and end points that kind of add, you know, other parts of what's going on around the world that's not just about Ukraine. And you get my point. So I plan on doing that and broadening this out. And this kind of wanted to point out at the start today that I was planning and I had set to do an interview with Doug Valentine, author of Operation Phoenix and the CIA. I'm blanking on the title all of a sudden in regard to the organized crime of the CIA and in regard to Ukraine. He's really all about this topic. So we're going to talk about this as soon as we can get together. The point was I had him set up today. We connected today and we're getting ready to go and could not figure out why his camera wouldn't work. And he apparently just used it. One of those glitches, you know, really could just be. But I find it interesting that we're talking about the CIA and the manipulations, the expert of it with what we've been digging into, and weird, just didn't work out today, but we will get it one way or the other. We were going to try to do it with just his audio, but I figured it's more important to see him on the show and talk about it. Whitney Webb had a great discussion with him right back in the beginning of all the COVID stuff and how he argued that the kind of the police state that was built, or rather the kind of health lockdown scenario, was kind of like born in Vietnam and how it went forward from the CIA operations. Very interesting stuff, but we'll come back to that. Now today, right now, we're going to stay focused on what's going on in Ukraine specifically and a couple of different points that broaden out into everything else. But I wanted to, of course, and as you can see in the title today, it's really focused on Bucha, Mariupol, and the false flags that these things clearly are in regard to how they're being lied about and how now there more is coming out around the fléchés you saw at the end of the show yesterday. We're going to go over all this and show you why it's, at the very least, very uncertain that it's absolutely Russia or who ultimately is behind this. The evidence seems to point in one direction, in my opinion. I'll let you come to your own conclusions. But as you expect, the Western press is screaming that we know for sure, even though they absolutely don't, because that's just how this works. And a couple of other very important points we'll go through today. I wanted to start off by showing you that somebody, you just sent me this, they updated the clip we played the other day that somebody else had sent on social media and made it into a meme, which I think is very appropriate. For those in the podcast, it's that same clip of the turkeys behind a fence where the guy gobbles at him and they all gobble back at him. And I laughed because I was like, this is pretty much what's mainstream corporate media is doing. And everyone just goes, blah, and they yell it back at them. And so this person made a little meme out of it where the top part says normies, bottom says mainstream media. God, it's so hard. It's so hard for me not to laugh at this. So, for those in the podcast, every time the guy says something, there's a, you know, it's the vaccine is safe and effective. And they all yell back, vaccine safe and effective. It's just, I mean, whether or not you even agree with the content, you know, that's how this is meant to work and how it always has. And it's being caught for and you admitted it. And, you know, but not now, not in this context. I thought that was very funny. I wanted to give him a shout out for, I don't know if they ever want me to give their names, but the point is, thank you who sent that to me. I think that's hilarious. Use it, guys. Download it, share it, get it out there. One other thing I really wanted to point out, and this is kind of my reference to the beginning, that other things going on that I thought was really, really crazy that we're not going to focus on today, but I thought it was important to you to, for you to see. This is from Epoch Times. Now, you guys have heard about these before. We've even pointed at these things in the past in regard to gender transition clauses, essentially areas that are being created at schools for people that want to be trans but don't want their parents to know so they can change when they get there and change before they leave. Now, this is up until now been college. So it's more of a thing that it's like, well, it's your choice there, it, you know, whatever. At college level, an adult, legally, that's their choice. But this article is discussing more secret gender transition closets discovered in public schools, more of them. So this has been pointed out, but it's becoming to be, it's be developing clearly into an open secret. Pun intended, I guess, to what you guys know what the open secret discussion is about, the movie and everything. The point here is that this is very disconcerting. You're talking about a situation where you have schools or whatever level's making the choice here, administration, teachers themselves, making a choice where they decide they know what's right more so than the parents. Even if you agree with them, even if they are actually more right, it's not their choice. But this translates into everything else we're talking about. They decide that the vaccine's good, so you don't get to make up your mind. You're too dumb to know because their circle decided it. Now, please don't see this as a left-right thing, as much as I know that's really what this is centered on, but we need to begin to see these things outside the paradigm. People within the paradigm, including the politicians, believe it's a left-right thing, but the people pulling their strings, no, they don't care what side does what as long as it ends up in the agenda they're trying to achieve, which is what we keep trying to show you. So people do exist as conservatives and liberals and Democrats and Republicans, those things exist. People believe those things, but it still is a manipulation. That's the larger point. So my point here is that it's not just a left thing, even though that's seemingly in the dynamic of today where that seems to be centered. But recognize that that happens on the right too right now, where they decide that they know what's correct and they don't care what the other side says or whatever else, and they force their ideology on them. It happens both ways. We need to always be aware of that. But in this specific case, it's just obvious this is inappropriate. The laws are clear. So why is this even being allowed? Because politics are trumping the law today in every possible way. And it always really has from a high level. But today, it's bleeding into your daily lives. You're not, think about this in any other context. You have a child without the parents' permission being allowed to dress up in another gender. And there's no way to non-sexualize this, right? From the level of people trying to manipulate. Why is a child who's not allowed to drive, who is not allowed to vote, who is not allowed to smoke cigarettes, who is not allowed to do literally anything without their parents' vote, now allowed to make gender choices about who they are when they don't even understand? Like the point that somebody else makes, okay, you know, when he decides he wants to be a superhero, are you going to let him jump off the roof? Now, yes, they think that's ridiculous to say. It's not the same thing. But the argument is that a child is not of the mental capacity to make these kind of choices for their body, especially when you realize that social pressure can get them to do drugs, can get them to do anything. This is history. This is logic. We know this. So why wouldn't we be concerned about social pressure driving them to do things like this? Maybe they don't understand it's not what they want. And they think it's what they want because they think it's a cool thing or because that's what everyone's doing or that's because my neighbor's like that. And then they wake up 20 years later, which is what really happens often if you just look at the statistics and they don't agree with their choice and they end up being suicidal and so on. And in no way is that meant to be a knock against people that want to do this for their own adult lives. I do not care what you choose to do with your body. I don't even judge. Do your thing. In fact, I'll call you whatever you want as long as you don't force me to. I'm happy to call you whatever you want. Some people disagree with that. I don't care. It's your choice. But if I want to call you what I think, that's not your choice to change it. And you know where this all goes. My point is, this is a microcosm of a larger point. And I've always thought the whole trans discussion, not the real discussion of just an individual being able to make their own choices, but the real politicized version of this conversation goes so much further than just caring about these people. In my mind, it ties into things like transhumanism. It ties into things like normalizing different situations around childhood and how they perceive the future. This stuff alarms me. Sorry to go off on such a long point, but I do think this has tied into so much more. And there's no way that, I mean, it wouldn't be secret if they didn't know they were doing something wrong. Even if in their mind they don't think it's wrong, they know they're still violating some kind of a norm. So they keep it secret with your children in public schools. This is alarming stuff, guys. Now think about how that translates into what they're telling you in everyday life. Now, here's another example of hypocrisy, just like that, by the way. U.S. won't rule out military action if China establishes base in the Solomon Islands. No hint of, no irony here, no laughing, no comparison. Nope, there's no, this is totally different than everything else that we're pointing at anywhere else, right? So China might decide to establish a base in the Solomon Islands, but because the U.S. doesn't want that, and they always frame it as, I mean, just how is this any different than what the U.S. government does literally everywhere? In the mind of certain Americans who are brainwashed would say, well, because China, bad guy. China's doing it for bad things. When the U.S. does the exact same thing, they're doing it for good things. Despite the obvious translation of those things throughout history to end up destabilizing countries and opening actual slave markets. And I mean, this is ridiculous to pretend that either they don't mean to, but always fail on the side of destabilizing countries, or they mean to and they lie to you about it. Either way, this is ridiculous to pretend like it's only bad when they do it. Bottom line is, if the Solomon Islands are okay with this, which I'm not even getting into that, that's not even the point, then that would make a big difference between how the U.S. government does it when they push in and argue it's for freedom, right? Let's just read this first part. One of the most senior U.S. officials in the Pacific has refused to rule out military action, which, by the way, if that was the same statement done by, let's say, Russia, simply saying, well, we don't rule out anything, they would flip that around to say they're threatening everything, right? That's how we're right today, right? Simply saying, well, we're adjusting our nuclear posture because you're pushing closer to our country. Which is a very common thing to do when things change. And they go, they're threatening nuclear weapons! And it's not even remotely what's happening. And they know that. I mean, they're being childish about this because they just know it goes, they're probably thinking, wink, wink, that's probably what he wants to do. So therefore, because we know Putin's playbook, these people buy into their own BS. But refusing to rule out military action is basically saying we will, you know, most likely they probably won't just directly jump into military action. At least they haven't in the past. It's more of a threat. But it says, if it were to allow China to establish a military base there. So the Solomon Islands don't get to make up their own choices? Why exactly does that make sense? See, sovereignty only applies to people they pretend it does. So the point being, like Iraq, you know, we respect your sovereignty, and then they all vote, you have to leave, and they go, no. Okay, so you don't respect their sovereignty, but they just yell it like it makes a difference. So the Solomon Islands or China, in a mutually agreed discussion, doesn't matter. It's only what the U.S. government wants everywhere in the world. Yeah, let's keep pretending like these people are not totalitarian authoritarians marching around the world screaming freedom. In no way am I saying China's any different. The point is that they're at least agreeing with the Solomon Islands or in Africa with these things that they do. U.S. didn't agree to regime change Bolivia. They didn't make agreements to occupy these countries all around the world. They forced their way in. They manipulated their way in. Now, I'm not saying that's not what's happening here in a different way. But you just can't pretend that their agreement, legally speaking, is unacceptable because you just don't like the outcome. That has nothing to do with the law. It's sort of like how the entire time right up until now, the U.S. government has literally been threatening Germany, an ally, with sanctions if they went forward with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline with Russia. Oh, weird how the Ukraine discussion just blew that whole thing up like that wasn't part of the plan. The point is that why was that against the law? Well, it wasn't. So why did they have a problem with it? Because they didn't want Russia gaining anything. So why was anybody okay with them threatening people because they just didn't like the way it was going? Because they're a totalitarian, authoritarian entity that has a lot of control over everything. Now, back to the point, so I didn't want to get too deep. I could go off on this one topic forever because it drives me crazy how we all know this is hypocritical. Even if you want to side or pretend that they're better or whatever else, this is just it's hypocritical. It's dishonest. That this would be acceptable, but the other wouldn't. Now, think about it in the context of Ukraine. Or even I'll just read what Caitlin Johnstone wrote. Well, first, as America-China Watcher points out, U.S. hypocrisy and double standard exemplified. Compare the U.S. position on military alliance regarding Ukraine and the Solomon Islands. Right? So it's alliance agreed upon between Solomon Islands and China. They don't, nope, not allow it, we'll take military action. However, all these red lines are crossed around Ukraine. Right? NATO discussions, even things on the peripheral, Poland, the different, you know, all of these discussions have been open, discussed red lines for years. And as long as they just have an excuse, well, Putin this, so we're going to do it because we have to, emergency, or we have to, we're being forced into it. It doesn't, it's just narrative. They're still crossing red lines everywhere, repeatedly, over and over and over. And Russia doesn't often take action. For 8 years, they've been pushing in, crossing red lines. And I'm not trying to say that they're not also doing bad things for all the baby ears out there that can't rationalize that I'm not only saying one or the other. The point is, it goes on to say, U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price said the key point is that there are principles that are at stake here that have universal applicability. Right, so what principles, what integrity? Doesn't matter. We're just pretending that we're spreading integrity around the world or whatever word they want to insert. Right. So when we do the same thing, it's the good guy side of it. Right. So let, I mean, it's as if you're doing, let's just say you're killing somebody. Right. So we're stabbing him in the, we're stabbing him in the chest. It's a good thing though, because we're doing it for freedom. They walk over and they stab him in the chest. And they're doing whatever their excuse is. And they go, well, that's bad because they did it for this reason. Well, it's all bad because you're stabbing somebody in the chest. So it doesn't really matter how you frame it. But see, on the child version of our side of this, it is because Ned Price said so. It's principles that we're trying to invest into and control. And so is that why you destabilized Libya and created a slave market? Is that why you destroyed Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria and all these different places for integrity and principles? Well, if that's the case, then you either didn't instill them or that's what you were trying to create. I just can't make this any more clear over the years, over and over and over. As Caitlin pointed out, the Pentagon has said the agreement could cause the Pentagon to destabilize the region. Exactly. This is the point. It's a veiled threat. China signed security pact with the Solomon Islands. U.S. expresses concern. The Pentagon has said the agreement could, quote, destabilize the region. Exactly how is that? Because the Pentagon will destabilize the region. That's what's happening, guys, and this is what they do. It's about the same thing with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. There wasn't any problem other than the U.S. wasn't getting their cut. Now, this is not even a secret. You can dig into this conversation and see there was no legal barrier. They just didn't want Russia having power over the energy flow. And, of course, they're going to argue, well, because Russia, bad guy, that means they could cut it off whenever they want. Well, okay, so could you. It's just about framing and about choosing to childlike believe that one side is better than the other because that's where you live. They're all manipulators. The bottom line is one side seems to be making agreements openly while the other side does surreptitious manipulative action. Both of them seemingly trying to aim for the same thing, if you want my honest opinion. They're planning to do it. I just can't get past how obvious this is. Now on to Elon Musk. Twitter accepts his bid to buy company, according to Twitter and different groups today, which we already talked about yesterday. Now, as Drew points out, I just want to show you some contradictory stances here, which is what this is exactly what we're just talking about. Contradictory stances like this or like the which one was it? In any case, just being a hypocrite, contradictory stances. Here is what somebody said about this back when Trump was criticizing Twitter. Robert Reich. Trump is suing Facebook, Twitter, and Google for violating his First Amendment rights by keeping him off their platforms, which is incredible to think about. A sitting president. Sitting president, someone should remind him that they're private companies to which the First Amendment doesn't apply. What a classic argument they'll say, which, by the way, is fair, except the fact that they're not private companies because they're wildly immersed and taken over by intelligence apparatus. This is the point. This is what Caitlin said in the past, that once they become intertwined with the government, it becomes state censorship. It's what it is. That's why they're obviously defending this as, I mean, the whole Musk thing and one part that I haven't gotten into from in my concern is that it's a way to kind of hide that it still is the same control by making it look like it was bought out by what, a different billionaire now? I mean, come on, guys. It's obvious. It's just this is a theater being put on behind us. I don't know why anybody ever expected this open technocrat billionaire oligarch to step in and save the day. Just, it's pretty interesting to me that anybody would buy that, especially conservatives. But here it is. As now he says, today, Musk and his apologists, what? Say if consumers don't like what he does with Twitter, they can go elsewhere. Which, by the way, Reich, was just what you were talking about in regard to a private company. Here he goes on forward. But where else would consumers go? To post short messages, they can reach millions of people on Twitter. The free market increasingly reflects the demands of big money. Oh, no. Oh, no, so they're not a private company that can make its own choices? Or I don't get, you know, this is being a hypocrite. This is aligning your logic with whatever works for you politically in that moment. A lot of them don't even realize they do this. We all do this sometimes. But what's frustrating is that it's either one or the other. You can't just play the middle. But this is what they'll all do right now. Musk and his apologists, which, believe me, has more there's more to that than you think. they're trying to frame this whole thing, I'll show you next, as I just told you, as some kind of a weird left-right paradigm thing, and more specifically about alt-right, white supremacy versus democracy versus fascism. That's what all this is coming down to, even though that's really not the side of democracy here. It's not even remotely what's actually happening. Where else would they go to post short messages? Well, you know, you could make your own platform, couldn't you? Or you could go to the 37 other platforms that exist in the same way. The problem is that they, at least in their perception, feel like they're somehow in control of this right now, or at least that's the false dichotomy, the dynamic going on here. But at the end of the day, it's hypocrisy. I guess it only applies when Trump wants to do what you want. You see what I mean? But here is what we're seeing, as I showed you the other day. Sean King, at its root, Elon Musk wants to purchase Twitter, not about left and right, about what he goes all the way to white power. Despite the fact it's never even, it's not even implied by what Elon says. So now we're back to the wink, wink, nudge, nudge part of it, where we know here, this is what he thinks and wants. I can't even believe we're at a part in the world now where journalists pretend they know what people think and feel and want. It's just silly, but that's all it is. Ukraine, everything. It's all about how we wink, wink, know what they really mean. And it's just so embarrassing. But bottom line is that could be true because he was raised in apartheid by white nationals, or, you know, as anybody could be raised and grow up and come to their own conclusions about the world, like the same thing they point out about any number of people where they come from a weird background. And I mean, there's plenty of politicians like that, right? Like Tulsi Gabbard, where they went after and attacked her for her background. And she goes, you know, I'm an adult and I grew up and now I make my own choices. So you guys are stupid. But it doesn't matter. They just decide. So it's all about white power and white nationalist. Really? That you turned this into a thing about white nationalism? Don't miss how all of this diverges into the same conversation. I guess not diverges, but they diverge it into the same conversation. Don't miss that coincidence. He's upset that Twitter won't allow white nationalists to target and harass people. Like, so now you go from just assuming that it's about white nationalists to the point to where now in that assumption, you're saying that he feels this specifically. He wants to allow these people to harass and target people. Where is this even coming from? But then, of course, this guy, apparently embarrassed by his nonsensical arguments, deleted his account. Doesn't exist anymore. And then moments later comes right back, which is the case. He's now back. Here's what I find really interesting. Deletes his account. Look, it says has deleted his account right there. The point was, Donald Trump joking, Trump Jr. joking that the purchase was enough to, it was worth it to get rid of him. So only in a world where the insiders can delete their account completely and then I guess call Twitter and be like, nope, I changed my mind. Give me back all my followers and everything. Because by the way, he did delete his account, 100%. Can I delete my account and then come back to, nope, of course not. Doesn't that show you an insider circle that we're talking about? Yes, it does. 1 million followers. He just leaves, comes back, no big deal. So why'd you delete it, bud? No comment. Now, here is no joke what people are actually saying in regard to Elon Musk and all this. And guys, do not miss what I'm talking about, how this is being forced in to some sort of a democracy versus fascism kind of argument. And these people, like this kind of person, I don't even believe is real. Like this would be a extreme version of people lost in the two-party paradigm, specifically the left in this case, whatever you want to call that inside the two-party paradigm, the woke, whatever, you know, this guy is, I guess, convinced that they somehow have an ability to stand up and cry enough to step to stop what they want to stop, shake their cans full of bolts and yell and make noise and be like, no, Twitter's not going to change. It's not going to do anything, guys. It never, ever does do anything but bother people. It's childish. And I've been saying that a lot lately, but that is literally what I've always been saying about the way they do this, where they sit in front of traffic and they shake their noise and they stop people from talking. That's the opposite of what they believe they're doing. But this guy is so upset that he believes that Musk is just stepping in to use his money to you can't just come in and buy. Yeah, you can actually. These people believe that what they feel is more important than what is legal, what's verifiable. Remember that clip we played a long time ago where Newt Gingrich was in an interview and she was directly saying, well, here are the facts, like whatever you can think facts or not, but here's what the FBI posted, period. Here's what they're saying. And he goes, well, no, here's what they're saying over here. And she goes, well, wait a minute. That's people online. They're saying that here's what they posted. And he goes, well, you take the facts and I'll take what the people think any day. That was an insight a long time ago into what was actually shifting. Let me see if I can. Maybe that'll work. Let's see. Right there. Look at that. Oh, of course. Oh, here. We got the clip. Let's see. Oh, the stream is offline. Okay, here we go. Is it going to work? Oh, you know what? I think I've got CNN muted. I do. Okay, check this out. Okay, I'm glad I found this real quick. So this is from 2016. Okay, now she's talking about crime stats, and all he is pointing at specific locations. And then when she just presses him on general, like, look, it's down. He simply refers to, I'll take what the people think any day. That was a long time ago, but now recognize how much that has become like the predominant reality, that it's about what they feel and think as opposed to what's actually happening. COVID saw that, Ukraine's seeing this, it's everywhere.
Crime is down in America. Violent crime is down. The economy is ticking up.
It is not down in the biggest cities.
Violent crime, murder rate is down.
How come it's up in Chicago, up in Baltimore, and
there
up in Washington?
There are pockets where certainly we have not tackled
your national capital, your third biggest city.
But violent crime across the country is down. We're not under siege in the way that we were in, say, the 80s.
The average American, looking at Dallas policemen, and look at the list of states he listed, the average American, I will bet you this morning, does not think crime is down, does not think they are safer.
But it is. We are safer, and it is down.
No, that's your view. What I said is also a fact. The average American feels when you can walk into a nightclub and get killed, when you can go to a party in a county government building and get killed, people don't think that their government's protecting them. When you have Baltimore, when you have policemen ambushed in Dallas. Now, that your view, I understand your view. It's the current view is that,
look, right, her view, not the data, the facts, but just her view, right?
Liberals have a whole set of statistics which theoretically may be right, but it's not where human beings are. People are frightened. People feel that their government has abandoned them.
Do you not hear what he just said? So yeah, that may be the reality, but here's how they think. So who's making that happen? They don't just wake up one day and just feel that way. I mean, maybe some cases when they come into contact with something that happened, but most people don't. The reality is that's because of the media representation. This is a very real insight for a brief moment back in 2016 into the obvious dynamic that was shifting, where it's about we can control the narrative. It doesn't even matter about the facts. And they've always been trying to do that. But we saw a very clear shift post-2016.
1 million Americans have dropped out of the middle class, according to Gallup.
Yes, well, that's the economic figures that you're saying, though unemployment has ticked down. But what you're saying Mr. Speaker, because you're saying liberals use these numbers, they use this sort of magic math. This is the FBI statistics. They're not a liberal organization.
No,
they're
but what I said is equally true. People feel more threatened.
Yes, they feel it, but the facts don't support it.
As a political candidate, I'll go with how people feel, and I'll let you go with the theoreticians. But
there it is. Exactly. That's called saying the quiet part out loud. And I don't know if you meant to do that. As a politician, I'll go with how they feel. You stick with the facts. By the way, in no way am I suggesting CNN or Western corporate media or any of them are always about the facts. My point is simply to show you this interesting exchange that very clearly was an insight, a window into where we were on a fast track to. Now, going back to where I was. Oh, right. I didn't even play this guy yet. Okay, you're going to love this. So here's the point again about how this guy feels. I swear I did that. Son of a gun.
This is a message for Elon Musk. Get your hands off Twitter now. Just because you have billions of dollars and are the richest person in the world, it doesn't mean you can just turn up and buy the town square.
Yeah, it really does, bud, because if it's for sale, you can buy it. Now, I'm not saying I agree with it or want it, but this is the stomping child plugging his ears. He doesn't realize this, that this guy is, acting juvenile. You don't just get to do something that you're totally capable and legally allowed to do, you rich person. I don't even understand. And of course, if this was the other side of it, right, if this was somebody he did like, well, of course it would be okay. And he would be on the other side of this argument screaming that of course he can buy it because it's a public company and he has lots of money. And if he's not legally breaking the law, then why do you care? Right. So it's just a hypocritical stance where you just take the side of what you want, not what actually means or what is legally allowed or whatever else you want to frame it as.
Now, a lot of people I know, including myself, have gone out of our way to make sure that Twitter is a place that reflects the values and ideas that serve the good of mankind.
Okay, so you're pretending in your mind that you as a single person on Twitter, now I'm not trying to pretend like your individual actions in a general sense don't better the world if you're being a better person. But this person's talk, I'm not going to pretend to know what he thinks makes a better person. But like this is the same point we were making before. His little circle is deciding they know what's right. So they're taking action that makes this a better world. And they're saying that his buying this is going to change that. Obviously, he's rooting this in politics. We can't allow the right to take over because we're building a better world on Twitter. And that's not what's actually happening. You're censoring anybody that does not say what you, and you're shouting down anybody that says what you don't believe. It's everywhere else we're looking. It's everywhere. Now, again, the right's doing this too. So do not lose that point. But just recognize how ridiculous it is to pretend that ultimately
serve the good of mankind.
The idea that he's somehow altruistically posting on Twitter to change the world for better. I mean, it's just kind of childish to pretend like their actions yelling into a chasm that is Twitter is going to change the world because they state what they think and that's the right thing to do, right? What really changes the world is actually going out and doing things that change the world, not just yelling into a Twitter that you believe the same thing you're told to believe and you get a pat on the head from the government.
Right. And you and your weird alt-right ideas on freedom of speech are...
What? So you see how now suddenly Musk is alt-right? I mean, despite the fact that he's an open technocrat and the fact that he's literally working on the brain machine interface and he's very clearly lined up with the Great Reset, which at least as far as I can tell is very clearly nonpartisan, but at least on the surface is being projected as a partisan thing. So what do we, I mean, why it doesn't matter. You say the wrong thing, you're suddenly alt-right, right? Even though I'm laughing at both of these extreme sides, all the parties, everybody in the two-party illusion, I still get called an alt-right or a white supremacist or whatever else because I'm challenging the narrative of Ukraine, right? It's just ridiculous. I'm at loss for how stupid some people have been dumbed down by this stuff. And I do not believe this is most people. I just don't.
Ideas on freedom of speech.
And the idea, the alt-right concept, this is where all this is being dragged down into. And what do you mean is crazy ideas about free speech? You mean that you should actually have free speech? You realize that's what he's saying. I'll play the next. I'll just let it play out now. So I'm not talking too much. The interesting part of this, guys, is they keep saying free speech, which is an unequivocal term, and then immediately following that by saying, but you shouldn't be allowed to have that. So we fight for free speech, except with these limitations. Well, then you're not talking about free speech, period.
Are dangerous to our democracy, ideas that serve the good of mankind. And you and your weird alt-right ideas on freedom of speech are dangerous to our democracy. Because it's not okay for people to just say whatever they
want. Dangerous to our democracy.
That's not okay. That's bad. It's dangerous. It's harmful. And you can't just use your money to take us back to 2012. I will not allow it. And I will be boycotting Twitter as a result. So get your hands up.
I will not allow it. I'm going to stomp my feet and I'm going to yell and they're going to literally not do anything about it because that means nothing to them, right? We're going to stand up and we're going to chant and we're going to say no to this billion-dollar company that is used all around the world. I mean, come on. This is childish, guys. I mean, I got to get away from that term. I just keep it seems like everything in front of me today is driving aggressively in the direction of just more and more infantile actions. But I brought this tweet up for a reason. Here's Super U on their posted account, which you guys should follow, by the way. And this is a classic meme. I support free speech, just not controversial opinions. That's basically what he's saying. This person says, well, I support physics, just not gravity. It's just dumb, right? I mean, you don't get to split it. Either you support free speech or you don't. Look, I'm not even going to say that you have a right to say, I don't support free speech. I support speech to a point. And you know what? If you want to say that, then dig in and make your argument and take a stand. Do not pretend and conflate free speech with what you want it to be just because you don't want to say that you don't agree with something that's enshrined in the Constitution. Because that's why they're doing that. They know it's dumb somewhere in their mind. They know that if they come up and say, I don't agree with free speech, you're going to get laughed out of the room. Because even the ones pretending they do will still maintain that argument. You don't agree with free speech if you agree with limits on speech. It's as simple as that.
And you can't just use your money to take us back to 2012.
What's 2012? I mean, where are these arbitrary things coming from? You know what I mean? Like, it's just to take us back to a point. Yes, he can, and he can do whatever he wants because anybody rich can buy it. And my point before is if somebody rich you liked bought it, you'd be all happy about it, defending it the same.
I will not allow it. And I will be boycotting Twitter as a result. So get your hands off and stick to cars.
Or don't stick to cars because they seem to crash every 30 seconds. But, you know, whatever. Yeah, it's just humorous to me how this is being framed as a two-party paradigm illusion. Now, I'm going to keep an eye on this, guys, because obviously this is pulling everybody into a certain... It's very interesting to me how easy people are being manipulated. Now, I had that... I'll leave it off. Okay, so jumping up to the next point, I want to start off with an interesting development. There's been... It's not really... The act is still pretty much the same. There was an update added I'll read to you, but I thought it was a good time to reiterate this act with what we've been discussing. And this was from... initiated at the beginning of 2021. And that is the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act of 2022. Here's what it says. Now, just think about how important and interesting this is with everything that's going on and all the Twitter comments. Now, everything seems to be converging, is the word I should use before, converging to this one main point from all sorts of different directions, from vaccines to war, foreign policy to Twitter buyouts. All of it seems to be driving back into white supremacy. How does that even make sense? The point is the bill establishes new requirements to expand the availability of information on domestic terrorism. I mean, what does that even mean, right? So expand the information. So right now they're cataloging everything like they always have been. This is just making a fine point to say we're focusing on domestic terrorism, which has always been the focus anyway. Whether they said it was war on terror, you can look back through history and see that all the policies were turned in toward you, just under a different guise, pretending we were protecting you or whatever else, as well as the relationship between domestic terrorism and hate crimes. And there's your connection to whatever the woke policies are, right? About saying that you can't say these words, you know, right? You can't talk about vaccines being dangerous because that literally puts us in danger. Not really a hate crime, but it's the same kind of ambiguous argument they're making. Hate crimes can become whatever they wanted to be. And by the way, hate crimes aren't actually a crime. I don't mean that to say that there's something you should accept. My point is that in any other context, you name a hate crime, I'll point to you the law that already makes it against the law when it actually translates into a crime. That's the point. It's already a crime. You don't need to isolate it from another direction and make it some focal point like he did with lynching, let's say. It's already a crime to kill somebody. It's not, you know, the fact that you want to make it an extra special crime because they do a certain way of killing, it's just ridiculous. It's a political manipulation. It's always been a very serious capital crime to hurt and kill anybody, whether you hang them, whether you shoot them in the head. So my point is to add the hate crime part of it, it's already a crime. The point is what they're trying to use is to say, well, if I call you a certain name, well, now is it a hate crime? Is it against the law for me to say a certain term? Now, look, I think it's detestable for people to call people to use racial slurs. It's just gross. I think you're a bad person if you do. My opinion. Plenty of people might disagree. And you know what? They have that right, even though I may think they're a disgusting person for thinking that. But that's how free speech works. What they're now trying to do is come at this as if they're trying to protect your little baby ears from anything that might upset you, even though that's not possible, and then add things that aren't even related. You know, come into discussions of, again, you can't say these kind of terms. You can't do. I mean, think about how they're trying to censor your discussions while they're pointing at Russia censoring discussions around what they call the war. Isn't that the exact same thing? Yes, it really is. And that's why they're all doing the similar things. It goes forward to say it authorizes domestic terrorism components within the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice and the FBI to monitor, analyze, investigate, and prosecute domestic terrorism. Isn't that already a thing? You see my point? Like, just because you're now fine-tuning what domestic terrorism is, which of course is the point, it's about dumping, you read the whole act and you find out it's stuff that like we're doing today, but the point is that it's already a crime, isn't it? Right? If that domestic terrorism, whatever that is, translates to shooting somebody or breaking into a location or bombing something, those are all crimes already. So just pretty silly to just continue to, it's all about politicizing a topic. And here is, this was in before, but make sure you see this. I'm talking about them jointly covering all of this, including, why would you need to put including? It says including white supremacist related incidents or attempted incidents. Okay, so what was white supremacy acted like, people who are white supremacists, Nazis, KKK, acting out and killing somebody. Well, that's already considered domestic terrorism. It already has been for a long time. So why did you need to put comma, including these things that are already included in that topic? Because that's how these things go. This is being put out so they can just make you look at this, including this thing, which is all it's really about, white supremacy related incidents. Why would they have to shoehorn this one thing in to a law that already includes it? Because that's what this is doing. It's directing your attention to the political point they want you staring at. Because this is coming, guys. It's already here. We already see it. Then it goes on to say, additionally, Department of Justice may make, this is the part that was added, this one highlighted part right here. Additionally, DOJ must make training on prosecuting domestic terrorism available to its prosecutors and to assistant U.S. attorneys, which is an interesting addition, isn't it? So they added in there that now we have to, I guess, retrain our law team to be able to basically, I think this is about social engineering, making sure they know how they're supposed to prosecute these things so it goes the way they want them to. Just my thoughts. But finally, it says it creates an interagency task force to analyze and combat specifically white supremacist and neo-Nazi infiltration of the uniformed services and law enforcement agencies. Now that is new. This is specifically a focal point on making sure that this isn't infiltrating these groups. Now think about the interesting dynamic here. We'll read the last part too. Finally, it directs the FBI to assign a special agent or hate crimes liaison to every field office to investigate hate crimes incidences with a nexus to domestic terrorism. All comes together. Now think about this. They're literally passing laws in this country, or bills and acts and whatever else, to say we can't even allow there to be any ideology, let alone actual crimes, inside of our uniformed services, law enforcement, military, whatever else. Can't even allow it. Not even a single person. We have to weed them out, right? And what they say, of course, is the threat to our democracy, right? Didn't you just hear him say this? He just told you this is a threat to our democracy because he's a white nationalist, whatever else. Okay. So explain this to me. I want to make sure I don't read this to you without just reading the text. Oh, so that's right. So I'm just reminding myself of the comment. So think about this dynamic. So it's our democracy in this country, even though it's not a democracy, is at threat because of white supremacy. They're all saying this, and we have to stop it, right? In this case, with this bill, they have to weed out everything, ideology, individuals, right? But in Ukraine right now, they go, yeah, well, they've got white supremacy, and they've got alt-right and neo-Nazis, but it's a small group, and it's not everywhere. And it's not a threat. They say, why? Because they're a democracy. I mean, you can't make this up. This is the open current argument, and they're literally contradictory. So if it's in the United States, well, it's a problem because our democracy is a threat because they're just simply there. Can't even allow it. Craig Lang, terrorist, you know, white supremacy, blah, blah, blah. Craig Lang, who literally was embedded with Right Sector, the odds of Italian entities, and that's a problem. But you just simply look at Ukraine and then compare the situation. It'll tell you, well, no, they're there and they do exist, but it's being overblown and that's not a problem. So we can arm them still. Like, you guys are debating about anything even remotely happening in the United States, but we're sending over billions of dollars of arms, even though they know and have admitted that they're involved. And the truth is that the Azov movement and Right Sectors, Fabo, and all these different groups are completely immersed. But even their narrative shows you that they admit that they're there. So why is one this all-encompassing threat to the world and our democracy, but because they have a democracy, the same thing's not a threat over there? It's just childishly stupid. Now, my point here, I made this yesterday, actually, and this was about, this exposes to me, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that these people are well aware of what they're hiding from you. This was Alan McLeod pointing out this article from German outlet, The Lie of the Neo-Nazi Battalion, and he says it's all about downplaying Nazis and the role of the Azov Battalion, right? But he says, but the image they literally use shows three unambiguous Nazi symbols. Like, that's how ridiculous these people are. And then, here's my point, not just that they did that, but then instantly, maybe because Alan pointed it out, they changed it. Not only did they change the title, but they changed the image. This is an entire article about the Azov Regiment, and yet they use a picture of people that aren't in even the Azov regiment. You know why? Because the symbol would be there and they don't want you to see that. That shows you a conscious choice to hide what they know is Nazi, neo-Nazi associated symbolism. Now, why would they do that if they thought they were being honest? No, it's a lie and it's not real. They would leave the symbols and explain why they're not what you think they are, but they are what you think they are. It's the Wolf's Angel symbol. It's the black sun. It's all these classic Nazi symbols, but they hid it from you. My point is, guys, there's an effort right now to very aggressively hide what they are while simultaneously upplaying anything, even if it's not true, in the United States, and then quietly still making the connection lines between the Azov and the United States, but more specifically, somehow lying the group, the groundwork to Azov being related, or even not just Azov. I think they're going to go away from that, specifically just the white supremacy threat and the way it came about being tied back to Russia. I've been laying this groundwork for a long time, and I think it's very obvious that was what the plan was. Now, here is something interesting. I hate these. I'm going to refresh it when I'm ready. You can't pause it, I guess, or I guess you can. I'll have to restart it. Hold on. Instagram. Okay, so this is a post from Project Veritas. Now, people, it's very partisan, as we know. And usually I really do. And I mean, even this is interesting. I like what they cover because it tends to be interesting. And even though it's partisan, they do good work. But I found this to be very telling. Oh, that's right. I did download the video. So here's the clip and I'll talk about it. This is Project Veritas talking about terrorists being already present and circulated around the country, but they came from Afghanistan. That's a valid concern, especially since we know the very entity they claim they were there invading to fight from 10, 12 years ago, the Taliban, are now the group they left in power, which makes no sense at all, except when you know what's really going on. But then they bring in the refugees, right? So there's plenty of people that probably deserve to, you know, or whatever, have that aren't terrorists, but there could have been people that were embedded or meant to be, or that whether they wanted or not, or maybe it was a plan. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities. It's a valid point. Maybe they were. Same thing with Ukraine too, right? That's certainly possible. We shouldn't dismiss it because politics. I argue it's not all of them and it's not none of them. There's probably a middle ground in there where there's some dangerous people that would find their way over. My point would be, doesn't this begin to paint the picture of a vanilla ISIS sort of thing where you've got people on the ground that are, they're being acknowledged by this partisan outlet as being terrorist entities from Afghanistan. And then suddenly when you have some kind of attacks up on just happen or something happens, you then argue that they were working alongside the neo-Nazi entities in the United States. That, and there you go. These are hypothetical thoughts, but I can see how the groundwork is being laid. And I just can't, I can acknowledge that part of this could be confirmation bias because I see it everywhere right now, but trust me, I think about that every day. And I'm trying to walk it back and consider whether or not this is just what I keep seeing. But the evidence is becoming hard to miss at this point. So watch this clip and tell me what you think.
I want to update the American people on our ongoing evacuation operation in Afghanistan.
A source inside the federal government has come forward to reveal suspected terrorists are roaming freely inside the United States following the Biden administration's exit strategy in Afghanistan.
Interesting. Now, this is just a small clip that was on Instagram, right? But isn't that interesting? Doesn't that seem to interestingly align with what could end up being exactly what they've been warning about, what they've been discussing, how somehow it turns out now you've got Afghani terrorists on the ground that would be potentially working with the, you know, disgruntled conservatives that want to overthrow the government, or however they're framing this. And they both have the same agenda of overthrowing the U.S. government, right? You can see how that would fall right into place. Just something to consider. And I do believe, my opinion, I think this is pretty hard to miss, guys. So another point. Ben Swan had a clip. I'm going to play this right now too, in regard to the war. And how, in general, right now, Google is just demonetizing anything that challenges what the state narrative is. Let's be clear. That's where we are. And they've just rationalized, just like we showed you before, how the same people that were screaming wars are bad are now screaming why we need to continue this war, because they've just warped their mind into thinking it's the same thing. We used to argue that this was completely the fact that Google or any entity like that would actively censor anything that goes against the narrative. Not that they've proven wrong or false. They just state it. So now the government gets to dictate what is ultimately good, moral, and bad, even though they're the ones that are the least moral, good, and legally, they're rampantly lawless. This is what history has shown. This is what everyone saw from COVID. And yet here we are where Google is just censoring anybody, Facebook, Twitter, anybody that challenges the narrative. Not pretending like it's because they're putting people's lives, just because they've stated now, as Caitlin pointed out, they're just openly saying, if you challenge what they say, you're going to be censored. If you challenge historical events like 9/11, you're going to be censored. Not because that, whether it's real or not, you just can't even come out against it. Just like, it's just never been more clear, guys. And I think that's alarming. It should show us where we're going.
This Google will now demonetize any content that, quote, exploits, dismisses, or condones the war in Ukraine. Google has now published a new set of guidelines for Google AdSense, essentially saying that any website or publisher that goes against their official position on Ukraine will be demonetized. Consider the fact that the United States has been at war of some kind for at least the last 20 years. We're talking about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but also wars that have taken place in other places as well. Syria, in Libya, and the overthrow of the Libyan government and Muammar Gaddafi. Or how about what's happening right now in Yemen? The U.S. has been dropping drones on Yemen since about 2004, so they have no position on this in terms of other wars, but only specifically on the issue of Ukraine. That is where Google has now drawn the line. Google is telling journalists and website owners that if they say the wrong thing, they will lose their access to advertising. And it just so happens that the wrong thing is anything that goes against the official position of the Pentagon and the White House.
Ben Swan always doing a great job. Make sure you check out Sovereign. I mean, just think about how blatant that is. Just blatant. You just can't challenge what the Pentagon says, even though the Pentagon and the government have lied about just about every single thing they've ever been involved in. But, you know, that's where we are today. It's quite incredible. But that's why it's best that you don't fall into the trap of you know, using things like that. It was a blessing in disguise when they kicked me off AdSense way back when. I wasn't even doing the daily wrap-up at that point, just posting articles on the website that was very small, and they kicked me off AdSense because even then, we were not willing to quibble about the partisan BS, right? The point is, they kicked you off, and I ever since then, and more so after YouTube specifically, I've built a model based on your support. If you believe what I'm doing is important, then this will continue. Because they can't control that. That's why I'm so glad that we're not dependent on advertisers. It's directly from you guys. It makes me happy to say that. Now here, let's shift into what's really going on the ground. This is the stuff that we had to run over pretty quickly to finish the show up here today that I want to get into. I want to play these so you guys can watch what is being discussed. Now, of course, the critics out there, and you have a right to be skeptical, would say that this is, you know, an RT entity, therefore it must be fake news. But that's ridiculous, right? That is a political choice. Could it be untrue? Yeah. Because it's political conversation. It's not just possibly untrue because it's RT. It's possibly untrue anywhere you watch it. Whether it's CNN, Fox News, RT, or Sputnik, it doesn't matter. You should be an adult and recognize that they could be lying from the government, from the United States. They could be lying from the government of Ukraine, the government of Russia. They could be lying from RT. They could be lying from CNN. They could be lying from any of them. So what you should do, if you're actually an honest person, is listen to what's being stated and consider it with what you've seen before, what you know you can prove, and what you've done your discernment and your due diligence around. I just think that's such an obvious point. Just because it's RT does not therefore mean fake news. And this is my point, the same thing you get from conservative and liberal. Right? If it's on CNN, fake news. If it's on Fox News, it's fake news. Just as a blatant standing argument. Like, it kills me because it's really hard to argue past that. People that have decided this will dismiss this without looking at it. So how do you reach those people? You know, that's what I need your help with, because that's my only objective. I mean, almost to my own detriment, to be quite honest. My only objective is to reach that person who does not want to see this, who does not believe it, who is lost on YouTube and whatever else. You guys are good. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still going to keep the show is about continuing to inform you as well. But again, almost to my detriment, I feel like I just go out of my way to try to break through to these people. And that's why it makes me so proud to have these letters of people saying that to me. That because of you. I mean, I literally saw that show and it opened my eyes. And it's like that one letter makes my entire career worth it. You know? Enough talking. Okay, let's watch this video. Make sure I've got the right one. Okay, here we go.
A lot of journalists that go to places like Mariupol or in Syria, like Homs and Aleppo, they focus exclusively on the destruction, but they don't give any context as to why there is destruction. Can you talk?
In case you, this is, I didn't give the setup, I did yesterday. This is Eva Bartlett on the ground in Ukraine. traveling from, believe in the Donbass region and in Mariupol, and going around and documenting what she's seeing. You know, and people, just because she's already been labeled as such, will dismiss her, and that is a political choice. I honestly find Eva Bartlett to be one of the most honest, hardworking investigative journalists that I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. And I mean, you could argue in that statement, you could argue that I have a bias towards her. I think I'm critical of everybody aggressively. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. I'm very hypercritical about whether or not I can prove it. And this is not something I can prove, but I would show this video just like I would show the ones I show you from Patrick, or from the ones I show in the contrast to what he says, as I just did the other day. The woman saying that the Ukrainian army helped us. But then she also said that after that, when the Russians came, they helped us too. So it just shows you that it's not as binary as they want you to think it is. But the history matters, and what we can prove matters.
Talk a little bit about Mariupol and what we're going to see and why it is that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the destruction, the city is devastated, most of it. You'll see buildings just like we saw in Homs, in Aleppo, that, you know, crushed down completely. Why that happened? Well, Ukrainian soldiers and Azov nationalists, what they would do is place their weapons within these residential buildings, and they would force the residents to go either to the basement or to lower floors. They would occupy higher floors, and of course, they did that in hope that Russia or TPR soldiers will return fire and damage these buildings, and creating a perfect picture of those terrible Russians that are, attacking civilians, which is.
And we've seen, I mean, at least off the top of my head, I can think of four or five, I think it was five different videos where people have explicitly stated that, saying that we watched them. The worst one was where they said they built a fire on the top of the roof. And I don't know if that was to keep them warm or if it was meant to burn it down, but either way, it eventually burned the building down and they had to leave. And they did that because they were shooting from the roof, or that they were, grabbed them, threw them in the basement after raping the women, and then sat there and used their house as and then when that house gets bombed and they get killed in the basement, they claim, oh, Russia's bombed the basement. I mean, this is how it keeps going. That's not what I'm saying. I don't know for sure, but I've seen an endless procession of people leaving Mariupol, leaving these areas, telling you that's what they experienced. I just don't know how this can continue to get dismissed by people.
It's not true. And as these nationalists and Ukrainian soldiers retreated deeper into Azovstal metallurgy plant, they would continue bombing these buildings. Even the new people are still in there, and blaming Russia and TPR soldiers for it.
Right.
I mean, that's the context, and it's not just me saying it. It's the people who in Mariupol who said it to me numerous times in numerous interviews. So it's not just my imagination.
And also, of these people you've met in Mariupol, were there people that said, like, we wanted to leave earlier but we couldn't, type of thing? Because I know that was common in Syria, people that were in areas occupied by terrorist factions, eastern Aleppo, eastern Ghouta, Madaya, Homs, etc., wanted to leave when Russia set up humanitarian corridors but were unable.
Yeah, that was definitely the case in Mariupol as well. People did want to leave. People did want to evacuate. Russia announced many times the creation of these humanitarian corridors. However, when Ukraine was still in control of the city, they kept the residents in this kind of information vacuum, if you will. They didn't.
Right, and that's an interesting point. We've already made this clear. Or a lot of them were told that Russia had already been defeated, that there was just rogue groups going around, and they had to keep them safe or whatever else. Right. And so these people were told that was what was going on, but they were being starved. They weren't being given water. They were being held in these rooms. I've seen at least a couple of videos of people saying exactly that. And the idea is that the corridor is beyond, you can't refute that. Because in the beginning, remember, this is what I keep showing you about the mass grave conversation. They keep contradicting themselves because they're lying in a certain moment and they lie a different way the next time. The point is, when the corridors opened, remember, Zelensky himself said, no, I'm not going to allow them to go this direction because they're not going to go into Russia. So you physically stopped them from being able to take the corridor out of the area that was being bombed because you didn't want them to go to the Russian side. under the guise that, oh, well, they're going to be hurt over there. Why would they just, why would they take the time to move them over there and then hurt them? Like, it's just such a stupid argument. The point is that they made them not do it based on their narrative. And then once they're stuck there and they get bombed, they just blame Russia anyway, or say that they didn't let them leave, even though it's obvious and on the record. And this is my, this is what I keep pointing out about the dishonesty of corporate media. I'm not the only one that can see that. They reported that. Then the same outlet will a month later report that they didn't know that, or that Russia held them there, or the same with the mass graves. The same, it was the Guardian would, or I think it was the, any case, would argue or would report that the mayor said, I buried them in mass graves. And then a week later, the same outlet would argue that Russia buried them in mass graves and it's proof of their atrocities. It's just crazy to me. Somebody at some level is aware of these contradictions and just doesn't care. Maybe all of them for all we know. By the way, I just see the comment down there at the bottom. Whitney is doing well. She's going through some ups and downs, obviously, but she'll be on the show soon, so don't worry. I was just talking to her today.
Not let them know that Russia created those corridors. Even now, we're seeing the final battles for Azovstal metallurgy plant. Even now, Russia is, from time to time, they're announcing ceasefire so that the people can safely leave. And they're calling.
No, I'm not sure. Somebody just asked if she left. He left. No, not at all. She's doing great. She just, remember, she just had a baby. And so there's just lots of stuff happening and on and on. Whitney is still with T-Lab and we're still knocking it out of the park. We plan on having some more interviews at the very least, as opposed to the articles, until she gets kind of, as she's also, by the way, working on her book still, which is just a really immersive book. And it's taken a lot of effort, a lot of time. And I'm all good with that. I tell her, you take as much time as you need. Get that book out. It's going to be an important one, you know. But in any case, no, she's doing well, so no worries. And she'll be back on with T-Lab work coming soon.
All these nationalists and Ukrainian soldiers to lay down arms, promising them that they will be treated as POWs according to the Geneva Convention. However, that information does not fall through to the regular soldiers and is being kept by...
You notice that car, by the way, with the Z on it right there? Just, you know, small things to take note of in case you didn't see it. I mean, that means Russia, right? So this is just a random car in Ukraine that are driving by that has a big Z on the back of their car. I mean, that doesn't mean everybody, but what it does show you is that it's not as all encompassing as they want you to think it is. And it's not every Ukraine thinks Russia's bad and they're all trying to run to the savior of Zelensky. That's not what's happening. In fact, I think it's aggressively the opposite, personally, seeing as how, from what I can tell, most of the refugees have gone into Russia, but which is exactly what they're trying to avoid you from seeing, but nonetheless.
Does not fall through to the regular soldiers and is being kept by the higher ups, because they do want the people to stay there because they're using immersion as human shields. They know that for as long as they have these hostages, Russia will not use all of its military might to destroy them.
Exactly, so as it was in Syria.
Exactly. It's the same playbook. It's absolutely the same playbook as in Syria.
Right down to the Western propaganda about what's happening.
Absolutely.
And the whitewashing of the Nazis and their crimes.
I hate the same playbook thing. It's the same point, right? Like, just like what you should say is it matches their historical actions. Right. Because the problem is that when they're saying Putin's playbook, they're not pointing to historical actions that back up what they're doing, because Putin's never used nuclear weapons. Putin's never used chemical weapons. So the argument, well, I mean, at least on the surface level, I would argue all of them have done their own, you know, stuff that we could point at historical discussions. But at the end of the day, it's not the only, like right now, historically verifiable, the only country, not like side entity, but country that's used chemical weapons or nuclear weapons, it's all the United States government. Pretty hard to miss that. But nonetheless, I still hate that kind of broad reference. The point should be that they have their actions of the past make this at least likely they're doing the same thing again.
And the same virtue signaling all over social media from people who have no idea about what's really going on.
Right. Hashtag save Aleppo. Hashtag I stand with Ukrainian
exactly.
Nazis.
Exactly.
One last question. I know your reporting is mostly on the people and, you know, what they've endured, their suffering, and the rebuilding process as well. But have you had the chance to also see any of the prisoners of war?
Oh, yes. I interviewed a mercenary, a guy by the British guy. His name is Sean Pinner. I'm sure his interview is already out there somewhere on the net, on RT's website.
He was talking to me, saying that he had no idea what was going on in Donbass for the last 8 years, and he got married to a Ukrainian woman, and to him it was he was defending her in a motherland, you know, and he had no idea about any of the atrocities. He said that he's never seen any Nazis in Ukraine.
And he's in Mariupol.
He's in Mariupol, yeah. I asked him, does he know who Bandera is? He's like, yeah, I heard something about that. I saw some Photoshop pictures about torch marches, but you know, it was Photoshopped. It's not true. I said, did you know that his birthday, he's a Nazi collaborator, proven Nazi collaborator, and his birthday is an official state holiday in Ukraine. And,
By the way, what's funny is, So this guy in Ukraine literally just argued that those images of their torch lit marches were faked. You know that's not true. I mean, that's verifiably true that they did those marches. I mean, the Western press made a bunch of articles about it, right? I mean, it's very clear. And then, weirdly enough, it's exactly what the Rise Above movement did at the Unite the Right rally with their march torches, and it all ties back to Azov, which ties right back to the CIA. It's all the paperwork trail. You can see it all. So it's interesting that even he was told it was fake news. See the information war going on? It's incredible.
Pretending to be dumb, I guess. He didn't know about that. Of course, he was in captivity. And he's a mercenary. He's not a prisoner of war. He's really a mercenary.
Thank you.
And according to the local laws, he could be facing a death penalty. So he would be saying anything and everything to save his life. And he's hoping that he'll fall under prisoner exchange. He doesn't really, you know. He's not a soldier. He's a mercenary.
And this question is again, like with the preface that Western media will say that, you know. Sorry. Let me reword this. Ukraine, the Nazis, and maybe the Ukrainian forces themselves, but particularly the Nazi factions, have been grotesquely abusing Russian prisoners of war. Abusing is an understatement. They've been torturing them, mutilating them, and murdering them. How would you say the Russians and the DPR forces and LNR forces treat prisoners of war?
It's a huge contrast between how Russian prisoners of war are being treated by Ukraine and how Ukrainian prisoners of war are being treated by Russia and Donetsk People's Republic militia. I went to a prison where there were over 2,000 people within this prison. It was all army. They've been fed three times a day. They have places that they get medical help. Many of them told me that they were scared to lay down arms because they've been told that Russians will kill them and Russians will execute them. And they were pleasantly surprised when they were taken prisoners and they were treated with respect as a soldier should be treated. Of course.
Right. I mean, that's the information war, right? That's what they're yelling at people in the basements. Like, they're well aware of who these people are because you hear all of them say it when they come out, how they're raping, how they're stealing, how they're using their homes and burning, you know, whatever else. But still, even though they're dangerous and scary, they're still telling them the Russians are worse and they're, you know, blah, 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 yelling at them what they want them to think, right? They're going to kill you if you go out anyway. So they tough it out. But every time we keep talking to these people, you see the interviews of these people, they're saying, well, they gave us food, they gave us diapers, they gave us... none of it adds up with what you're being told.
The situation is completely different on the other side, and we all saw that footage where Ukrainians, after detaining Russian soldiers, would shoot them in the legs and kneecaps.
Right, that's on footage. I've already shown that.
Kicking them and hitting them and mutilating them until they were dead.
There was one even where a soldier was in a stairwell and was being stabbed to death through his face, his eyes.
Yeah, and of course, these Ukrainian soldiers who are captured, they think that the Russians will do the same thing to them, but they don't, because Russians still have a lot of humanity left in them.
Well, you know, even that last statement I would take issue with, because look, there. I would argue, by and large, there is an obvious contrast. We can see that on the ground. But does that mean that there's not a Russian soldier that wouldn't do that or take advantage of the situation? Personally, I don't find that believable. the contrast is there. So it's much less, I would argue, if that's the point. But like I said, war is war. And there are people are human and there are bad people out there that join military for reasons like this. And so maybe that to argue that just wouldn't happen. That is that would my point. That would be the bias you're seeing right there of the RT media. Right. But it, everybody has bias. And that's what we that's why as an adult, you show discernment. You look at the data and realize that that aligns with everything else we're hearing. So again, just watch for yourself. Keep track of Eva's channel. I recommend you watch it because she's down there going over this stuff. Now, here's her other video, 4 minutes long, of the mass grave discussion. And then we'll go over the points that I kind of breezed through yesterday. Let's take a listen to what she has to say. Because the reality, guys, is that she's there. And guess what? She spoke to people and the mass graves that they're talking about, at least in Mariupol, fake news. The people on the ground, the person that would have dug them is saying, nope. This is a normal cemetery, the exact location they're claiming it's there. Nope, fake news. And that's even the satellite imagery they're showing you. Oh, shocking. Maxar Technologies lied to you? What a hard thing to wrap your mind around. Son of a gun. Apologies, guys. I just grabbed this for myself, and I guess I can't seem to find it all of a sudden. There it is. Apologies.
India is awash with new accusations against Russia, this time accusing Russia of secret burials and mass graves in a town west of the city of Mariupol. Accusations are that Russian forces threw up to 9,000 civilians into a mass grave in an effort to cover up their alleged war crimes.
Now, note on all of these, the argument is always that not just that they killed them and we were forced to bury them, which, by the way, I said the same thing. Why would it be okay for them to bury their own people in mass graves? Like, maybe you could argue they were forced to, because that's not the point. The argument is they have control of the area, and then now that they have control, the mayor himself in Bucha said that they buried him in mass graves. So in every reference other than that, you're going to see them claim that Russia put him into a mass grave trying to cover up the evidence or whatever else. But yet, weirdly, in Bucha, left them all on the street. Right? I mean, it just doesn't, none of this adds up. It's all whatever they need to say in the moment. But just recognize the argument is Russia did it. Now she's going to prove to you it's not true.
Reports cite Ukrainian officials, notably the former mayor of Mariupol, no longer in the city, as the source of what he calls, quote, barbaric war crimes. And according to him, Russians dug huge trenches 30 meters wide and chucked people in. So,
and then plenty of the other reporting you're going to see also goes on to say, oh, but we started taking them out and we're burning them. Oh, really? So no one gets to prove or check what you're saying? Shocking.
With journalist Roman Kosarov on April 23rd, I went to the site in question to see whether or not there actually is a mass grave.
Exactly.
It is Saturday, April 23rd, and I'm at the site of what Western media are alleging are mass graves. Now, these are clearly new graves, and there in the distance is an existing cemetery, as media have noted. This is a marking of a person that was born in 1941, has their name, has the date of their birth, and it's obviously a known site. Now, there are also unknown graves, and they are simply numbered, but there are many that are actually marked with date of birth, or at least with name. Here we go, another one, 1964.
So again, the argument is not that nobody was killed. Right. The point is, when people are killed in a war zone, you need to, I mean, the point is, just because there's a body doesn't mean that therefore Russia did this. That's how the Western press is running with this. That look, there's dead people, so that Russia did it. We know that, right? That's the argument they did with that video they played at the UN, a bunch of still shots of grotesquely dead people. How in the world would you prove that that wasn't just committed by the very people that Russia's saying did it, which is Ukraine, which, by the way, they are doing stuff like that. That's a verifiable fact. So point is, you don't know, do you? They just aren't lying about it, which they've already been caught lying about 17,000 different things in this whole story. As the Off-Guardian called out right in the beginning, the ghost of Kiev used a video game, or the images from Taiwan or pretended it was in Kiev, or the jets flying over Russia, they pretended that was over Ukraine. They just, it's over and over and over, and they're verifiable. It's impossible to miss if you unless you just ignore it. So the point here is that there's dead people, sure. And that's very upsetting and sad. And that's the reality of what this is and why we shouldn't agree with it. But it's individually labeled. So by definition, that's not a mass grave. Now, maybe it happened after the fact, but that's not what they're telling you. Right now, they're pretending like this is a war crime and that we need to investigate. And meanwhile, they're actually arguing that they're burning these bodies, but it doesn't seem like that, does it?
This is the second plot. These are not occupied graves.
I mean, to me, this just seems like an extension of that cemetery or the area of the cemetery where they're just, you know, in a hurried manner burying people. I mean, for Jesus, they're still digging 6 feet down. It doesn't seem like that much of a rush. I mean, it's not what you're being told.
And then these are all completely empty. There's one beyond, for the sake of accuracy, I'll take a jog down that way. I mean, this is just now, at this point, two rows, one of which is vacant. And then that's it, Western Media. Nothing else.
I've seen that back in 2015, 2014 as well, where mass graves were discovered as Azov or Idar retreated. It's in the Donetsk region. And we saw mass graves with civilians. I even saw a woman that was she was dug up. She had her arms tied behind her back, and she was pregnant, like in the latest stage of pregnancies. And she had a hole in her head, so that means she was executed. So mass graves is something that they do, something that they've done quite a bit. Mass graves, at least according to the...
Which, by the way, especially for those that are dismissing all of this, or, you know, rightly skeptical, I'm going to show you next in a report from 2016 that openly discusses not just Azov, but the SBU specifically in being the most egregious abuser and doing things just like this. But let's pretend like that has no bearing on the same group right now in this war, because democracy, right?
Head of Donetsk People's Republic, Denis Pashilin, at least 300 sites have been discovered since 2014.
Man. These are the people for the podcast. These are the people that are responsible for doing the burying in this area. So they would know more than anybody. And let's be clear. The image, where she is the exact location from the satellite imagery that they're showing from above, which is one person argued, but they're doing these lazy investigations with satellites because it's just what they say, this is what it is. And you take their word for it. Even though I'm also showing you that Maxar Technologies, a CIA cutout, has been already caught lying about what they're showing you. But here they are, and they would know, right? And here's what they say. We bury people who were brought from Mariupol. Firstly, deceased.
Те, которых привозили из Мариуполя, первых из погибших, это два квадрата. Вот квадрат.
These two areas, this one and that one, both are for civil population.
Этот квадрат специально предназначен для мирного населения. Всех хоронили,
как говорится,
под номерами, которые опись ведется в морге, особые приметы, у кого были документы,
указаны
фамилия, имя, отчество.
Все хоронили. And in coffins. Yeah. Mass grave.
Или в отдельных могилах и в гробах.
Можно теперь вам вопрос задать? Вот западные СМИ сейчас про это место говорят, что здесь они говорят, у нас есть снимки. Здесь ямы.
Pits 30 by 40 meters.
40 метров, куда российская
where Russian army throws bodies of people from Mariupol.
Сбрасывает трупы мариупольцев. Вот я вам сейчас
here are my news for you. What do you think about it?
Доставил новость. Что вы про это думаете?
Это все бред.
He said that's BS. Fakes.
Это фейки. Во-первых, здесь.
First, here is one grave for every person.
Есть одна могила на одного человека. Человека хоронится в гробах. Есть ниже даже захороненные военнослужащие.
I mean, for crying out loud, they're even burying the Ukrainian army. I mean, you know, could they be lying? Yes. The point is that these people have names that they verified that you can check for yourself. There's due diligence that can be done. And these are the people on the ground burying bodies that live in this area. It's not too difficult, right? It blows me away that this is the level, the choice to take at face value what you're being told while in the face of the evidence that contradicts what you're seeing. It's just a juvenile dismissal of the reality in front of you. At the very least, conflicting information. Just choosing to ignore this stuff and acting like, well, it is fake news because that's not what I'm supposed to look at. Like, did you prove that it wasn't real? Are you just saying that because you think it's the RT or because you think it's Eva or because it just doesn't align with what you were told? Yes, it could be. It could be. But an honest person would acknowledge that you don't know that. And this is something that should be digested and considered. But nope. Fake news.
Украинская армия. Которые захоронены в гробах, в отдельной могиле. Если он опознан, у него есть...
otherwise has a number. I mean, again, just the fact that they have all the numbers and everything else lined up. I mean, it's very, very clear, guys, in my opinion, anyway, that this is at the very least. Excuse me. That's the background playing. At the very least, not a mass grave. Right. I mean, that's pretty simple.
Табличка, либо же он под номером. И найти его как бы можно.
And нету нету no здесь массовых могил, here.
Захоронений не было.
Это не братские могилы. И
говорится,
в общую могилу не сваливают. Каждому человеку, Each хоть какой, веселушник или мирный, это без разницы. Это человек все-таки. И каждому человеку предназначена гроб и могила. Это все...
It's a refutation for those who want to blame Донецк.
Того, что хотят свалить, что ДНР военные хоронят как братская.
They lie to Donetsk military bury Ukrainian soldiers in mass graves. They lie that Donetsk military buries Ukrainian soldiers in mass graves. So he's on top of that saying they're lying about in the reverse as well.
ВСУ. Это все обман, ложь.
It's all fake. He said it's a lie. It's all fake. Well. You should consider it. You should consider that it could be fake, too. I don't, like my opinion, it seems pretty obviously the reality based on everything we have in front of us. But if you're choosing to ignore this without due diligence, that is a political choice. That's not based on facts. That's based on your choosing a political side. Now, here's what we showed you the other day. Here's what they're saying again. This is what she just showed you. She just showed you this. She was on the ground in that location. And here's the Guardian saying Russian forces accused. Oh, accused, huh? So why didn't you, before writing the article, find the facts and not just go, Ukraine said this happened, because they don't care. Accused of secret burials in Mariupol, civilians in mass graves. The mayor says, that's all you need to say. Hashtag Ukraine says. Is that that's the epitome of our Western journalism today? Ukraine says? Apparently so. Mayor says, corpses thrown into mass graves, which he appears to be visible on newly released imagery. Right. Maxar Technologies. Who could have guessed? The mayor. Boychenko said Russian trucks had collected corpses from the streets in the city and the port city and had transported them to nearby villages. Oh, great. So that means that they're no longer there to be verified, right? They picked them all up and took them to a place and they buried them in a location that doesn't exist. So how about they didn't actually ever exist in the first place? How about that the narrative being spun by the mayor to argue that's what happened? Or at the very least, there are people that they killed then put somewhere else. And that, any way you look at it, it's verifiably not what they're saying happened. They were then secretly thrown into mass graves in the field next to the settlement's old cemetery. That's exactly where she just looked. Talked to the people that bury them. Fake news. That's how that works, guys. The U.S. company Maxar Technologies released images of what appeared to be mass graves in the same area. The site has been expanded in recent weeks to contain more than 200 new graves. Well, here is the difference. Which, by the way, is hard to see that they're even the same spot. Is that even the same location? Anyway, I mean, look, am I wrong? I mean, that doesn't even look like the same. Where's the street right there? I mean, they got this street, but where's this street? Right here. Anyway, I mean, am I wrong? I mean, that doesn't even look like the same spot. Regardless, the point is that Maxar Technologies is not to be trusted, guys, and I'll show you why. The mayor estimated that more than 20,000 Mariupol residents have been killed since Russian forces began attacking the city. They just said that. Where's the proof? Where's the evidence? Where's the facts? Most bodies have now been removed, he said, with some disposed in crematoriums. Oh, so they're not there because we took them out and burned them already. I just can't even get past. So these people are burying them with names and dates, and the very people that you're claiming are upset because Russia did this are burning them without any kind of due diligence? What about the families? What about the burials? I mean, this is just ridiculous. They're the ones clearly doing this. That's my opinion based on the facts. But obvious, they're not telling you the truth. She was just speaking to them. But there it is. Maxar Technologies. Let's not forget who they are. Maxar Technologies appoints Gilman Louie to its board of directors in 2020. The appointment of Gilman Louie serves on the company's board of directors. He's the chairman of the board of Vricon, which is also an intelligence apparatus entity, from 2016 until its acquisition by Maxar, which was completed today. This was 2020. Louis was the first chief executive officer and president of InQtel, the first venture capital fund for the United States Central Intelligence Agency. He also served as an advisor to many Department of Defense advisory boards and currently serves as the Commissioner of National Security, Commissioner on Artificial Intelligence. Right? The Commission on Artificial Intelligence, what Whitney Webb has discussed a lot. This is, if you talk about somebody who's suspect, I mean, guys, this is exactly what I would expect. Now, this just suspect, right? We shouldn't just assume that because he's this or that, he's lying. But then it turns out, as we already proved to you in previous shows, that the satellites, which you can look up online, weren't even in location able to tell whether or not Bucha specifically was what they said it was. That was the first discussion we had about this. Was it this one? No, I didn't include it in here. So the point was that they claimed to know in Bucha whether or not there was an attack that happened there. Was it this one? No, I guess I didn't include it today. Okay, and the point was that that was then shown to be false. They did not have the satellite present in the location to be able to tell, so that means it was either before or after, which means either way they took it, it was during Ukraine's control of the territory. And that's, guess what happened then? Nothing. They all jumped away from it, went to the next story. You can look this up for yourself. Look at my last show. It's very clear. So the point is that he works for the CIA. That makes him suspect, in my opinion. Here's the Financial Post. Louis is the founder and former CEO of InQtel, as we just said, for Central Intelligence Agency and the U.S. intelligence community with venture-backed entrepreneurial companies. So he's running these companies as well for them. He then also serves as the commissioner for the U.S. National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence. Of course, then we pointed out before that I think it's very, very, very telling that under Maxar Technologies on Wikipedia, the reason that we connected with this discussion is because on the previous episode from April 5th, this was the one. This is the review of the evidence one of Bucha, where we talk about the exact topic. So this is included, just not the page for my website. But note that it says Central Intelligence Agency right there.
CIA.
I didn't see that before. Oh, that's interesting.
Why is CIA listed down here?
See, you can hear him. Why is that there, right? Okay. It's very clearly there under Maxar Technologies. But today, they removed it. Why would that be? There's an obvious connection because they don't want you realizing that there's more to it. Before, they, InQtel, CIA, we'll just put a reference. But somebody chose to remove that. Edit, delete. Why? I think you know why. Key Bucha evidence came directly from CIA cutout. Now, again, recognize that today, in Mariupol's case, they're still relying pretty much solely on the allegations of what they think they're seeing from a high distant satellite imagery from a CIA cutout, despite the fact that Eva Bartlett is on the ground and proved that they're not telling you the truth. Okay, now the point is, here is the article for the mayor in Bucha making the argument that they made the graves. Right, Bucha's mayor reportedly said that hundreds of bodies have been found at the count, and the count appears far from over. This was all the one we saw through the streets and everything else. In Bucha, he says we have already buried 280 people in mass graves. That's very clear. Other places quoted this. That's exactly what he said. Now, nonetheless, this is from the 4th of April. Jump forward to the 6th, 2 days later. Images of mass graves have emerged from Bucha, as if this is the new thing. The guy just said he made them. Following reports of a massacre in the city, these reports of Russian atrocities have prompted Ukraine's Zelensky to accuse Russia of genocide. Reports of a massacre. Wrong one. Let me see the mass graves. I'm hoping to see if there's videos show dead bodies in a mass grave. I guess Maxar wasn't being open about it just yet. Nonetheless, guys, the point is that those mass graves were made by the mayor and people in Ukraine, right? He said that. So how then are they blamed on Russia? You could argue it's about because they killed him when they buried him, but that's not what they're saying here. Read it for yourself. So my point is, why would you take at face value this argument? Especially since Eva Bartlett has already completely demolished that and showed you they're lying. And also don't forget that the very people we're talking about, the Ukrainian military, were on record, caught on video, moving these bodies into place, which is exactly where they later were found in the imagery by the Maxar Technologies. I argue it's because they had shots of what they thought was, they had these imagery, and they moved them into exact locations. Or however you think this went down, the point is you can see them doing it. And the argument this is them trying to check if there's IEDs is just, it's juvenile. You don't move it more than once. You don't do it from 10 feet away. You don't kick the body right next to it if you wait for an IED. This is ridiculous, guys. They were moving them into place. The first one's the most obvious. Look how close he is. If that's an IED and you're moving the body, you're going to die. Anybody military would tell you that. Now, here are, I'll just include again, the points from people on the ground telling you what they saw in Mariupol.
So many people suffered. So many houses. Where is it all going to be now? Blood. Now when I get near my home, I have tears. I just don't know. I come close to my house. You see, I used to always come home from work and say, thank God I'm home. I don't want to say anything for our government. Nothing. That is policy. Couldn't they really have found an agreement? You see, you cannot let people down like that. How is it? Do it. Don't you have enough space, enough fields, where to do such? They got permission. They would have been given everything, those Azovtsi, militants of the Azov battalion. Because of this now, I have an impression that they killed them, but they still spread like those little dragons. I reckon that America influenced strongly such an outcome, which they wanted to join America, NATO. It could have been possible to avoid all of this.
Right, I mean, it's just clear that the people know. Well, this one's longer. Watch it for yourself. It's clear that everyone here is going to know that, or is stating for you that they saw Azov Battalion do this. They're taking bodies from the morgues, throwing them around, saying Russia's killing civilians. Right, this is a guy who was hurt by them. Where's one of the points? He says Azov something. The Azov see the Russians are coming, so they have to S on it. They S on it urgently. They want to show the world as if Russia's committing the atrocities here. They basically frame them. That's what he's saying. It was hell. They shot at us, the Azov. We saw it ourselves, right? This is just every one of these. You can watch them for yourselves. They shot at the local population. I've played all these for you before in the podcast. It's all in the show notes. These are actual individual civilians saying these things. Here's another. This is an individual telling you about Easter service and what Russia was allowing, which just completely challenges what they're telling you is happening, as most of this does. In four churches in Mariupol, they held Easter service, the Russian government. For example, in one of the central cathedrals, they admitted those people who used to go to the other churches, but which had been destroyed. Quite a lot of parishioners gathered there who all wanted to celebrate the holiday. Easter cakes, eggs were brought in with the humanitarian aid. You'll see in a moment, she's talking about the Russians bringing this for them. As far as I know, churches also distributed humanitarian aid. Because volunteers keep bringing food, hygiene products, so that people could come to church and get what they need. We also talked to the priest who told us, one of the priests in the cathedral, central cathedral in Mariupol, said that back on February 25th, they haven't stopped worship service for 2 months. On the February 25th, Azov fighters bursted in during the baptizing of a baby. They took all the cars that the church had. They beat up someone, said the church was of the wrong kind. Despite this, the priest continued the services. Only in the basement, all March, April parishioners gathered. Right, because it's typical. Like, you know, okay, so the historical discussions we've talked about have shown you that the national militia, which was the Azov Battalion, Azov movement, wandered around beating up ethnic minorities. That's in Western corporate reports before this started. So the same people here we're talking about that burst in and say, you're of the wrong kind. You can't, you're practicing the wrong religion. This is what they believe. And it's not just one little small battalion. This is the innermost entity in the mindset of the military, the government, the puppet regime, not necessarily every Ukrainian, right? And that's what she's telling you. And this is what we keep seeing from every location we look at, guys. Now, this is a 4-minute video, but go watch it. I'll include it. Watch it for yourself. There's lots of people that say over and over and over that the Azov battalion beat them up. They raped them. They robbed them. They put them in cellars. They wouldn't let them leave. It was the Azov fighters. There were incidents in the city. I mean, it just goes on and on. Azov, the right sector, they were simply killing us. We were cannon fodder. I keep saying it. I just don't even know how you can, at this point, even dismiss all of this evidence. Vanessa Bealey has some great articles here you can read for yourself. Quote, over 700 people murdered in their homes. Here's the actual article. It's from the Sacker from September 2021. Ethnic cleansing by Ukrainian forces in Lugansk. Both countries began opening mass graves on their territories. This is the DPR and LRP, the collective Donbass region, opened up mass graves that were created by Ukraine. It says it later in the article. In their territories created by nonstop shelling and mortar attacks against their cities and people. They proposed to locate the victims and identify them through genetic testing. Samples could then be matched with people searching for missing family members. See, this is what people do when they care about the people there, right? You don't just burn the bodies. Like, that's not how this is what it would look like if you care about the bodies and the families and the respect. Forensic teams are finding more evidence that Ukraine will have to address through a legal process in the future, which I doubt will ever happen. Where is the accountability for the Ukrainian government for these crimes? Over 700 people murdered in their homes, at work, at school, public spaces by Ukrainian military units. Not just Azov militants, but the entire military. Ukraine is still probably shelling civilians today, the article writes. In 2014, when these mass graves were filled, the people that filled them were the Ukrainian government. It's time for Ukrainians to realize without radical change, Ukraine has no future. Here's another article. Dubé describes a Ukraine battalion filled with cowards, shooting everything that moved and throwing grenades into the houses, cellars, and every structure, killing everyone and everything they came across. Sure sounds like what we're hearing from the civilians, doesn't it? Now, with all that being said, with the reality, and of course, as always, I could have gone on for 4 more hours with the data we've shown you from before this, but this is just the newest stuff as of today, but with everything you know about what these entities are, what they really truly are that they're trying to hide from you, what Time Magazine, The Daily Beast, and everyone else, and Stanford themselves were saying as of March 2022, as of the end of 2021, as if that somehow changed magically today. They're telling you these people are dangerous, internationally reaching terrorist organizations that are influencing people everywhere. Now, whether that's the full picture, whether that's actually the reality, the point is they're not shy in telling you that they are dangerous people. But then suddenly they turn into heroes and defenders of Mariupol because the narrative shifted. Here's the point. All that being said, today, Biden has declared an emergency. Don't miss the overlap to COVID-19 and the way the world is going to go forward. It's all based emergency declarations, right? It's because of this. It's because of that. It's because of a storm. It's because of COVID. It's because of opioids. It's all emergencies. Why? Because they need to be able to circumvent the things that you think they're bound by. So they declare an emergency. Nothing means anything anymore. Even if it really didn't mean anything before, it's about being on the record. So now the state uses the first Biden era emergency declaration to approve ammunition sales to Ukraine. Now, why would that be? Aren't they already arming them? Yeah, because they're talking about what's the term they used? It's in my title. It's right here. Non-standard ammunition, right? What does that mean exactly? Well, it's pretty ambiguous. It definitely means things that you probably wouldn't want to go to them, especially knowing who they are. But it also means when you declare an emergency to do this, well, now there's no real checks and balances if there ever were, right? So now, maybe it has to do with the fact that they're, you know, arming the Azov battalion. And in their own documentation, it still literally verbatim says none of the funds made available can go to provide arms, training, or assistance to Azov battalion. That's even indirectly. So that's what they already have been breaking the law for. They're already doing that. So maybe that's why they just go, "Dog, emergency!" So now it's off the table. Well, there's an emergency. So we're arming them, and it circumvents the acts because emergency. Why is this an emergency exactly? Why exactly is something that's happening in Ukraine an emergency to the United States national security? That's not a NATO member. Because there's a national policy, a government agenda that's completely rope tied into what's going on in Ukraine that has nothing to do with your security, has to do with their secure agenda. The point is they're just pretending that everything happening in Ukraine directly affects national security. That's ridiculous. How is that national security? Because Russia might get more power that ends up having to do this and translates to more action that could be nuclear attack. It's abstract. It's the same thing they did in Yemen. Yemen was never a national security issue, but they said it was, and that's why that's happening today. Obama declared it a national security issue. Why? Because that guy's dangerous way over there? Even if you believe he actually is, even though they've proven that to be fake news, even if you believe he is, how does that translate to an emergency to Joe on the corner over here? It's not. But they don't care. Declaring emergencies gives them carte blanche. They can do whatever they want. The State Department has issued the first Biden emergency to send $165 million more dollars on top of the $4 billion they've already sent in ammunition sales to Ukraine. Well, sales. So now basically they've given them stuff and then this is a boon for the munitions companies, for the defense contractors, the merchants of death. In a statement, the agency said that it has determined and provided detailed justification that an emergency exists. Oh, did they? That requires the immediate sale. right? It's just, why they're already sending them stuff. I don't understand that this needs to be sold and that it needs to be an emergency to be able to do so. There's some weird black behind the scenes stuff happening here, like black market kind of stuff, right? Definitely. Like there's weird stuff. This is how the CIA operates. They do these things outside the normal scope. Here's what they actually said. April 25th. This was yesterday. The Secretary of State has determined to provide a detailed justification. Oh, so you just said the same thing. Where's the detailed justification of why it's an emergency exactly? Just there isn't. It's an emergency because we say so. Because Ukraine and Russia bad. That's it. Here's what it says. Again, the Secretary of State has determined and provided detailed justification, apparently not to us, though, that an emergency exists that requires the immediate sale of Ukraine in the above defense articles. And it's just listed right up here. Included, of course, but not limited to. So why even list it then? So it's what you're going to give them whatever you want. What you wrote down here is the milquetoast things that you're not worried about saying out loud. 152 millimeter rounds for the D-20 cannons. I mean, just on and on and on. Automatic grenade launchers, mortar rounds, grad rockets for neo-Nazis. That's fantastic. To people that have openly committed the atrocities we're going to show you even next. As of 2021, as of 2022, according to Stanford, in the national security interests of the United States, thereby waiving the congressional review requirements under Section 36B of the Arms Export Control Act. Oh, good. So you can send them whatever you want and you don't even get to have, there's no review process. So are they sending them biological weapons? Are they sending them chemical weapons? Who knows? We don't even get to see anymore. As if that would ever even go through that process anyway. The point is, this is like diplomatic immunity. We don't even get, there's not even the illusion of a process anymore. Emergency! Now, what is the emergency? Why are we as Americans in a national security emergency because of what's happening over there? I'm sure they can make an abstract argument and everybody who wants to agree with it would go, because of the food supply, which is not even them doing that, because they're going to rush it bad, we can't allow them to have more control, then they'll be able to do this. Okay, please explain how that translates to an immediate national security risk for the United States. You can't keep pretending like every powerful move in the world immediately translates into a national security risk. They do that because that's how they frame their concern over loss of policy, loss of control, loss of power, loss of resource, loss of geostrategic manipulation. It's constant. These are powerful people that are afraid of other powerful people taking what's theirs, so they frame it as your interest. This proposed sale, whatever that ultimately means, I mean, are we really going to pretend like it's a sale? This is money laundering. I mean, they're giving them lots of money and then giving it back and giving them weapons. The proposed sale will support the foreign policy goals and national security objectives of the United States by improving the security of a partner country that is a force for political stability and economic progress in Europe. Yeah, a force for political stability. In fact, they're the exact political force. That's the reason this is happening. They know that. Economic progress? How exactly? By robbing the country and using it for their own. That's what's happening. Because that's what even their own reports were saying they were doing before it shifted into being a fight for democracy. This is naive, guys. It's ridiculous. This is their detailed explanation, I guess. Foreign policy goals, national security objectives. So nothing. That. No explanation at all. It's good for you. Shut up. Great. None of the funds made available by this act to provide arms, training, or assistance. That's exactly what's happening. It's right there, and that's why there's an emergency. Now, on top of all those other things, here's maybe one thing they didn't want you to think about. Now, if this is what they're doing kind of quietly, take a wild guess what kind of stuff is going to them that they're considering non-standard, so much so that they need to create an emergency to send it without any oversight. It's worse than this, but here's one thing that is included. Kiev has specifically asked for new kamikaze drones to fight Russia. Now, if anybody else uses these, they're called terrorists, right? Anybody. That's, we've already seen this. Using Iran or, oh, kamikaze drones, they're terrorist acts. It's like the kamikaze bombings, and they just kill themselves. It's like a suicide bomber. Okay. Well, yes, it's a drone. There's not a person inside of it, but this has already been framed that way. So now in a weird twist of fate, or entirely expected twist, the very people that once called these terrorist drones are now giving them to Ukraine, giving them to terrorists to be able to use against who? Whoever they want, including government, including people, including whatever, including using these drones to commit attacks that can be blamed on Russia. The Air Force delivered Phoenix Ghost. At least 121 of the new drones are headed to Ukraine as part of the latest $800 million package. That's not even including the $125 million secret package or whatever they're sending over there. But this says Ukraine asked for the U.S. a new drone to fight Russia. So the U.S. Air Force delivered one for them. So it almost sounds like they created it for them. A new lethal aerial weapon that the Pentagon is reluctant to detail, except to say that it will take on many of the qualities of the kamikaze Switchblade drones already in theater. What I can tell you as the Phoenix Ghost is this was rapidly developed by the Air Force in response specifically to Ukrainian requirements. Look at that. So not only that, we have Ukraine entities that are openly neo-Nazi dictating what the defense contractors are making. If you don't think that this is completely not just that they're helping or they're doing what's right for democracy, and you can't see that the Pentagon is literally puppeteering what's going on in this country, that the CIA is literally creating what they're using to puppeteer this country, it's crazy obvious. They just discussed how Ukraine is using, Zelensky specifically, is using U.S. law firms to fight against sanctions. U.S. law firms, U.S. arms, U.S. government weapons, U.S. government control, U.S. government policy, U.S. government, NATO, everything. The only thing that's pretend Ukrainian is the puppet government they put in place, or the Ukraine civilians on the ground that are being abused in the process. At the Pentagon briefing later on Wednesday, John Kirby clarified that it had already been developed by the Air Force in discussions with Ukrainians. We believe the particular system would be nicely suited. Okay, so you're challenging what they said. So who's telling the truth? Probably not the politician. This is a suicide bomb, guys. This can send out, it says weighs about six, look at this. The small thing is 300, Switchblade 300 weighs about 6 pounds, can fit in a backpack. It's tube launched. When it's fired, it can target 10 kilometers away. So you can fit it in a backpack, go anywhere, quietly, secretly, load a bomb into it, shoot it, and then 10 kilometers from that location, you can bomb something. This is almost unaccountable. Despite the fact that you'll find the drone, maybe it's meant to explode, you won't even find it, but I doubt the due diligence will show that anyway. The bottom line is, guys, this is going to only make it much worse, much more sporadic and dangerous for civilians and anybody else involved. And all of it without any due diligence, like we've already seen, we blamed on Russia, because that's what the Western press does. Oh, let's not forget that as they send all these things to the Ukrainian government, we've already proven to you that both DynCorp and Blackwater or Academy are already there. They're already operating on the ground. That's why they pretend that there's not, we don't have U.S. soldiers. Yeah, you do. You've got a bunch of mercenaries and contractors just like you did in Syria right now, and you still do. It's verifiable. Watch this show. I'll include it again. And don't forget that DynCorp has an open, obscene history of human trafficking. People like Cynthia McKinney calling them out directly in front of everybody. I mean, on the record, having evidence that the fact they got caught for it, and this both Blackwater and DynCorp are present. They're mercenaries. They've done horrific things on the record, and they're operating on the ground next to people that you're fighting democracy. No, they're the same kind of entities that are operating anywhere else. This is a dangerous situation, and they're only making it worse by giving them everything that they asked for and blaming Russia for all of it. Now, finally, or last 2 points, we have the discussion of the flechés. Dozens of Bucha civilians were killed by metal darts. Now, what's interesting to me is like, wait a minute. Didn't they just scream for weeks about how they were shot by Russians? Isn't that what it was exactly quoted by the people that supposedly found them on the ground and said Russians shot them in the head? Remember? I mean, it's amazing how you can just jump to the next narrative. Either they were killed by artillery explosions, which then you could argue could have been anybody, or they were shot in the head by Russians. I mean, you can't just keep shifting the narrative. Well, they can, clearly, because they don't care. But then they just go, oh, but Russia uses those, so it's Russia. Well, okay, so now you went from claiming you know for sure Russia shot them in the head to then saying execution style to then saying that, well, this is something Russia uses, therefore it's Russia. Well, that's not true. Just because Russia uses it doesn't mean somebody else couldn't have used it. You see how ridiculous this gets? But here's the better point. These are, shocking, guys, Soviet-era weapons. Oh, you mean exactly like we already know they secretly sent to Ukraine? Yes, I keep making this point. It's like using Katyusha rockets and pretending that means that you know it's Iran. It could. And yes, they are Katyusha rockets that get used in some cases, but it's not the context it would be used in that place, especially when they know that if a Katyusha rocket's used, they're going to use that as an excuse to blame Iran. So why would they keep using those rockets? It's the people that use them and leave the thing behind to go, yay, it's them. We knew it because they fired one and then ran away and left the truck there full of rockets. It's just stupid. They treat you like you're a child. Here we are, April 24th. Dozens of civilians who died during the Russian occupation of Ukrainian city of Bucha, even though we don't know, in fact, the evidence very clearly suggests they were killed after they left the area, seeing as how one of the most obvious points that nobody wants to address is that if they were there for weeks in 50-degree temperatures, those bodies would be balloons. It would be disgusting. But they weren't. In fact, it looked like they were killed very recently after the pictures were taken, which proves that it wasn't the Russian-controlled area when it happened. But nobody cares. I've already proven this to you. There was the smallest amount of decay on the fingers of one of the bodies that was all the skin basically looked the same. There's still fresh blood on the ground. How could it have possibly been on the ground for a week or more or for a month? I think it was at least more than a week for 50 degree temperatures. That silence is there's zero answer to that because there is no answer. There's no explanation. They just pretend like it doesn't. They don't even address it. Here we are again with something just like that. During the Russian occupation, they say, city of Bucha were killed by tiny metal arrows from shells of a type fired by Russian artillery. Forensic doctors have said, which forensic doctors? A Ukrainian forensic doc. Got it. So the Ukrainian government. Sounds good. As always, Ukraine says, shocking, I know. But the point is, all you have at best, even if this is the truth, is that it's something that they also do use. But you know who also uses it and has been caught using it in Donbass? The Ukrainian government. But I guess they just forgot that part of it when they did their due diligence, right? Pathologists and coroners who are carrying out postmortems on bodies found in mass graves in north of Kiev. So right there, you should be questioning the entire story based on everything we've already seen about mass graves and the type that this is Ukrainian government-controlled entities doing this, or whether they're doing it or not. They're just saying they're doing it. We're occupying Russian forces have been accused of atrocities, right? They haven't even proven that they even committed them, but now we're jumping past that to say, but see, we knew they were accused of it, and here's proof they did it. They said they found small metal darts called flechés embedded in people's heads and chests. Quote, we found several really thin nail-like objects in the bodies of men and women, and so did others from my colleagues in the region, said Vladislav Pirovsky, a Ukrainian forensic doctor, told The Guardian. So The Guardian didn't do this due diligence. They're being relayed information by the Ukrainian government, and here's what they found. It's right there in the picture. Goes on to say, independent weapons experts who reviewed the pictures. Great. So Ukraine stands up and sends them a picture. How do you even know that's what actually was found? How do you know they didn't just take a picture of something they thought was Russian and sent it to you? And you guys go, oh yeah, that's Russian for sure by the picture. Am I the only one that thinks this is just plainly childish? I mean, look at what they're doing. They're getting sent an image, and here's what they say. Seen by The Guardian. Pictures they were sent. Confirmed that they were flechés and an anti-personal weapon widely used in the First World War. Okay, they know they were flechés pretty clearly, but they go on to make the statement, we know that because they saw the pictures, well, they're definitely Russians. In the First World War? So why are they even using them? Do you realize how much more advanced weaponry they have? According to a number of witnesses in Bucha, which ones? We don't tell you. We don't even cite them. We don't give you pictures. We just say we talk to people. Flechés rounds were fired by Russian artillery a few days before the forces withdrew. Now, if you actually click on this link, which I did, here's the one they're pointing at. Okay, let's see what she has to say. April 18th, lethal darts were fired into Ukraine neighborhood by the thousands. Doesn't seem to suggest Russia just yet. A pile of sharp, fine projectiles rounded up by this woman are now gathered rust in a spring's fine mist. I love their ridiculous, what is this, a novel? They always do this, and a lot of the people pretending to be mainstream media love to do this. It was a stormy day, and it was... I find it insulting, to be quite honest. She combed her walled courtyard for them. Okay, so did she see it fired? Isn't that a good question? Doesn't see there's one paragraph. I'm sure they get to it. She said after a Russian artillery shell carrying them burst somewhere overhead days before the Russians withdrew. Okay. So a bomb explodes over her head. Are you telling me she somehow knew that it was fire? But they're both firing. A video I saw was, you can see there's open video of both Ukrainians and Russians firing into this exact area where they claim this happened. So the point is, if there are people in those areas, you can see the Ukrainian government more than anybody indiscriminately firing everywhere. And the point is, we know there were civilians in there. All the evidence is there. So you know they were in there because they're now coming out afterward. So you can literally, on video, show the Ukrainian government firing aimlessly. That means for sure that they hit something, somebody that was in these areas. And in the reverse, you don't really see Russians doing that. You see isolated specific hits, but you could argue they still accidentally hit somebody or maybe aim for them. I don't know. But the difference is you can see the broad, aimless firing of the Ukrainian government. But back to this point. How in the world does she know it was a Russian artillery shell when all the firing is happening? Was she standing in the street watching them fire? Come on, guys. This is ridiculous. And by the way, note, there's no quotes anywhere. So for all we know, she said, it was fired in a shell, and that becomes, she said it was fired from a Russian shell, because that's what they do. Did she say Russian shell? I guess we'll never know. burst somewhere overhead. Or maybe she does. Maybe she's convinced Russia bad guys because she's buys the narrative, maybe because they are bad guys. The point is that it's just completely subjective and we don't know. Days before the Russians withdrew, seeding the area with thousands of potentially lethal darts. Why? Why? Like, just because you want to pretend that they're bad guys doesn't mean that there's a logic to doing that. On the reverse side of it, remember, these people on the ground, the Azov Battalion, Azov Movement entities, have openly expressed a desire to do that to these people. I can't say that enough. I've read it 1,000 times. To one side, there's an obvious reality of why that makes sense. On the other side, it could happen, but there needs to be some logic to it, doesn't it? There's not just the only thing that I guess would make sense is if they wanted to do it to then blame it on the Ukrainians, and you should consider that. Then the evidence around that matters. Until we can prove it, we shouldn't make that argument. Some were embedded in the tarp that covered her vehicle as if someone nailed them to her car. So the point is she walked out after it all was over and found a bunch of darts, guys. That's the reality of the story, and that's why it's one paragraph long. So my argument is they're using this to pretend that she said Russians did it. I don't even think that's what happened. But at the end of the day, how could she possibly know for sure? According to Neil Gibson, a weapons expert at the UK-based Phoenix Insight Group, who has reviewed the photos, this is what I was saying before, found in Bucha, the metal darts came from, specifically they say, 122mm, 3SH1 artillery rounds, in use by Russian artillery. Well, as my investigation shows, that's pretty much not the case, that they're in use. Have they been used in the past by Russians? Yes. But of course, this Neil Gibson guy in the UK-based Phoenix Insight Group, a lot of these guys will just say what they're paid to say. Now, I'm not saying you should think that. Do your due diligence, as I did. And it does not seem to line up with what I think the reality is. Evidence collected by The Guardian during the visit to Bucha, Hostomel, and Borodyanka, and reviewed by independent weapons experts, showed that Russian troops used cluster munitions. Now, that has not been proven. What they have evidence of is cluster munitions use. And they do the due diligence and say, we can prove they're cluster munitions. And then they go, therefore, Russia did it. That they play this game. It's the same way their fact checks work. They kind of step over the main point by pretending they're proving something else and act like that proves the main point. It doesn't. Just because you can prove cluster munitions were used does not therefore mean that Russia used them, especially since we have no evidence they have in this area, yet we have lots of evidence of Ukraine using them in this area. And I'll show you next, as well as the absurd reality that the US uses them all the time and Israel uses them all the time and nobody seems to care when they do it, which are banned in much of the world, and powerful unguided bombs in populated areas, which have destroyed at least 8 civilian buildings. I'm of the belief, based on the evidence, that was very clearly the Ukrainian government. Flechettes are rarely used in modern warfare. Okay, so explain for me why you think Russia's using them now, other than periodically by the Israel Defense Forces. Of course. Think about how ridiculous that is. And you know what? You know why? That's a war crime, what they're using, guys. As well as the butterfly bullets that expand and destroy the entire leg. These are used for punitive reasons. And even The Guardian, today, while making an argument that these being used by Russia are unacceptable, are going, yeah, and they're used pretty regularly by Israel right now. Are you kidding me? And nobody, where's the article next about how they're committing war crimes in Israel? Nobody's going to care about that other than us, which deployed them in military operations in Lebanon, Gaza Strip, killing and wounding civilians. Yep, exactly. Funny how that's just normal statements today, yet nobody's going to go after them for it. In March 2008, a Palestinian journalist and videographer with Reuters, a Reuters international journalist, was killed by flechettes fired from an Israeli tank. Yeah, no, no one cares. No one got arrested. Nothing happens. No big deal because Israel, good guy. No one cares. Hey, now here's the evidence that they don't want to talk about. So bottom line, this boils down to, we know Russia's used them at some point in the past. Therefore, we're going to pretend they're using them now. And we're going to argue that because we found these things and they have once used them, that they did it. There you go. Game over. We did it. Due diligence. Or despite the fact that you already said they were shot in the head, despite the fact that they were a thousand other things I've already listed off. And the fact that these are Soviet era weapons and that the US government's already acknowledged that they secretly sent in weapons to Ukraine of a Soviet era for flimsy reasons at best. Because they're not using Soviet era weapons. So why would they send in Soviet era weapons to either defensive or offensive, which goes both ways? Why would they send them in to find out how to work against them? That's their argument. It's like arguing we're making viruses dangerous things to make vaccines for in case they naturally happen, which is a 1 in a billion chance. It's ridiculous. They're making weapons and making weapons antidotes. That's what they're doing. Here, they're sending in weapons from a Soviet era so they can be blamed on Russia. It's remedial. Now, here is just one of the many things I found that gets into what this is. It says, while the British abandoned the projectile in 1943, it is interesting to note the Soviets introduced their S-3SH-1, what we were just talking about, projectiles, in the 1970s for artillery to deal with attack helicopters and are still working on tank main gun rounds for the same purpose. Okay, we're talking about a Soviet-era thing. Now, the current iteration of these things are very different. So explain for me why they would use an old, outdated Soviet flashe weapon that they know would be pointed at to them. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's just dumb. Why would they go here, use the thing we know is going to be pointed back at us? And even as we watch their Bucha narrative fluctuate and change every moment, it's just infuriating. And they've already been caught sending Soviet-era weapons. I just don't know how much more obvious this needs to get. Then comes to the most important point. All this, by the way, is coming from, again, from... Oh, this was the video I was talking about, the new Atlas, another interesting channel that I've recently found in this that's doing good work. And there are, by the way, I will point out there's a couple points in there that are a little bit, like, one of the points he makes is that the idea of these flashes and saying that it's no way it's Russia because they wouldn't have fired over their own area. And I'm just thinking to myself, well, that's true, but you have to argue, you have to at least be objective enough to point out that there could be the possibility that Russia could fake it. And that is certainly possible. So they would back away, fire it on their own area, and pretend it was Ukraine, right? That's certainly possible. The same way it's possible in reverse. But as I keep saying, we would need evidence to make that argument. And we have nothing but evidence on one side here, showing you that it seems pretty clear that it doesn't make any sense that Russia would do this, especially with something that doesn't make... I've gone on and on about it. My point is just that there, you could argue maybe a slant towards the Russian side of the narrative, which is fair to point out. But I'll point out this video in a moment. Here's what he referenced in that video. Surgeons in Ukraine's rebel Donetsk confirmed cluster bomb usage. And it was also confirmed by the Human Rights Watch. This is 2014, right? Going back to the creation of the Azov Battalion, which later became the Azov Movement, which immersed throughout the entire government. But at this time, it was right after the Maidan Revolution, pushed forward by the coup by the U.S. government. As we played many times, I won't play it again today, of the Estonian minister admitting that we know this was U.S.-backed entities that shot these people and that we covered it up. All on the record. They just hide from the facts. What they found is that they shot these things, cluster bombs, not just cluster bombs, but cluster bombs with these flashes in them. Exactly, combining both the things they're accusing Russia of and hurting people on the ground. Surgeons at in Donetsk, basically, have dozens of civilians that have been killed with these flashes using specifically cluster bombs. And this is being alleged by Human Rights Watch, right? So they're there. This is not some translated story. Human Rights Watch is on the ground. I'm not saying I trust any of these entities, because they are swayed by politics too. My point is that at this time, for whatever reason, the narrative was okay to be discussed like this. And they're telling you that the very same entities with some of the same exact people, including Beletsky, by the way, who's now back in a leadership role of the Azov Battalion, who is an open Nazi, who's still involved then, they're doing the same things. They're firing these cluster bombs, they're hurting people, because that's the objective, because they stated as much. Although Kiev vehemently denied that its troops battling pro-Russian insurgency in the east are using controversial, indiscriminate cluster munitions, medics claimed the forces were at fault. The global rights organization Human Rights Watch published their own investigation from the ground, identifying 12 different incidents in which the highly imprecise munitions killed 6 people, including a Swiss aid worker. Okay, so this is all very clear. And then it also should translate into how the specific entities we're talking about, in this case, the regime change puppet government in Kiev, lied. Said, how dare you accuse us of doing that? Human Rights Watch documented it. They're on the ground. They even have a Swiss aid worker who was killed by this. This is very easy to see. It's not just some translated one side says the other back and forth. This is a group impartial, supposedly, in this narrative in between it and reporting on what's happening and having evidence to back it up. Very different. And they still said, we didn't do it. Which is what you get from most of these groups. Same thing that happens from Saudi Arabia when they hurt the Yemeni people. The same thing that happens in Syria. I mean, any of their prolonged proxy war manipulations, they just come out and say, we fight for freedom. And then when they do things bad, they say, no, they're lying. It's the same old thing over and over. Quote, these arms are not for destroying buildings. They are uniquely for killing people, which is what we know. The surgeon working in the area told them. The little darts cause grave injuries. He said there have been cases where we found up to 20 or 30 of them in one person. I mean, think about this. It's just evidence, but it's an obvious indication that these things are being used by the other side. Could they be used by Russia? Of course, but I would need that proved, and I would like evidence of why it would even make sense. Meanwhile, we know that they've done this. We know that they want to do this to these people. There's evidence of them using this exact weapon in the exact same location. I mean, come on, it just gets ridiculous. Now, here's the video, by the way. And he does get into, there's a point I was saying earlier. I forget what he said. Anyway, you watch it for yourself. There's a point that I was referencing this video at. Anyway, I don't want to get bogged down on it. So that's the reference. He's doing good work over there. And then again, it translates into this. This is all we're seeing from the corporate media. This is Ukraine missiles attack on kill five in Odessa. Certainly could happen. Could happen by Russia. It could be an accident. Could be on purpose. It could be the Azov battalion murdering people still, blaming it on Russia. However you want to look at it, because none of this has been proven. An advisor to Ukraine's president says, that's where it starts. An advisor is the person, and this is the advisor of the president. The person who's saying the commander of ISIL are considered some of the most wise and successful commanders that there are today. The commanders of ISIS, that's what he's saying. That even though I thought in detail, even the degree of cruelty, he's admiring them. Cruelty for show. It is inhumane, but a very high level, a wise strategy. He goes on and on to gush about why they're good at what they're doing and how they manipulate people. And this is all he talks about. So a guy who's going, yeah, we should lie to manipulate people think, and then comes out and lies, manipulate how you think, and they go, oh, trust him. Hashtag Ukraine says. That's all this is, guys. And despite how many times it's been shown to be wrong, over and over and over, falsified information, faking imagery, using video games, it's never ending. And just in case, those that haven't seen this yet, I won't go over it again. Great article from the Off Guardian. Kit Knightley doing a great job. 7 fake news stories coming out of Ukraine. They're easy to verify. If you care enough to do your due diligence, it's right here. It takes 30 seconds. Every single one of these is easy to prove. Images from last year being used as today. Video games being framed as attacks. It's very easy to see. And then again, the point was this. This is just Stratcom Center posting this, but this was a video shown on the 5th of April in the UN security meeting. One of the meetings that which pushed Russia out of the Human Rights Council, based on imagery that can't be verified. It's now heads up, guys. I mean, this is graphic, but I'm not going to show it all. I just want you to see what they're doing. They're just presenting images like this. Here's a dead person. Here's another dead person. It's horrific and it's sad. It breaks my heart. Here's dead children. It's disgusting. Here's dead people on a floor. Like, okay, you don't need to see anymore. It's the same thing. The whole thing's like that. Why does this mean anything? The point is people in the UN, they're not stupid. They know that there's no proof that this is just emotional manipulation, which means that if they went along with it, then they are part of an agenda. Because anybody honest, any investigator, any police, a detective is going to say, well, this is just imagery. Where's the evidence we know this was actually committed by Russia? Just because the Western press yells it? To some people, that's what they need. But bottom line, guys, this is dangerous. We're in a position where that's where we are now, back to the original point. Google censoring people if they don't say what they're supposed to say. There's no proof. It's just narrative control, and it's aggressive. Now, the last point to finish off here is to recognize that it's not just Azov Battalion, Azov Movement, not even just Right Sector or Georgian Legion or any of it. It's specifically the entire government, guys. The SBU primarily is one of the points I want to focus on. We need to see that this is their security apparatus. This is what they're doing, not just from one battalion or one movement or one. They have a mentality that is dangerous. And that's been grown by the CIA and driven into place by the government of the United States. Another great video from I. Earl Gray. Ukraine's forces, quote, systematically and on purpose violate Article 3 human rights, according to OSCE. Now, here's a video. You can watch it for yourself. I just go through and point out what he had highlighted here. And what it shows you is two different claims of grave worries regarding the safety of journalists in Ukraine. Freedom Representative Morin's journalist killed in Ukraine. Now, both of them seem to reference this as Russia being the problem. The Russia war is why it's probably now, that could definitely be the case, but who's actually killing them and why are they at risk? I argue it's not because of the Russian government. One of the articles where it just makes it clear it's blaming it on, you know, specifically the Russian aggression is what they're saying. Here is why this is so obviously not the case. This is Atlantic Council, 2016, Ukraine's deadly profession. 3 journalists attacked in July. Okay, it says on July 20th, 2016, investigative journalist Shermet was assassinated in Kiev. He was hosting a morning show and was a top reporter on Ukrainska Pravda. He was assassinated, a car bomb, expected to be tied back to the government, but nobody cared. It would be easy to dismiss Shermat's murder as an outlier. Unfortunately, it's anything but. His death is merely the most dramatic case of steady deterioration of press freedom in Ukraine. This is under the U.S.-backed government. Many of the same people there today. So Olenia Smenkia, for sure. These people in the Azov movement, for sure. Christina, a reporter from the New York Times magazine who often writes about Ukraine's oligarchs, said she's received multiple death threats from the government. No charges have been brought against them. I wonder why. Doesn't the West care about press freedom? Only when it works for their agenda. It's unclear who is behind the murder, but critics have accused the government of harassing and trying to silence Nettlesome journalists over the past several months. April 26th, Ukrainian government banned the country's top television host. Did they scream press freedom? No, they didn't. If a fraction of that happened in a bad guy country, they would lose their minds, but not with one they control. Almost regularly, you will find far less press freedom, far more dangerous situations in any country the U.S. government's occupying than the places they point at. That's pretty much regular if you're objective and look honest with yourself. Now, it goes on to say, in May, Ukrainian hackers released names of all these journalists, Reuters, BBC, French press agency, Al Jazeera, Human Rights Watch. They were all doxxed by the Ukrainian government. Not only that, the Ukrainian parliament member, or specifically the interior minister, who is an open Nazi himself, who's clearly somebody they pushed to the side in 2019, praised it. Said, great job. They're helping the Russians. And then he published it on Facebook. These are the people your government supports and always have. If you just don't, and this is Atlantic Council pointing it out. I argue it's because back then they were trying to point this out because they didn't want you to see that they were the ones building it. Because if you can blame it on somebody else, all the better. Shermat's murder, which is a chilling signal, said former Vice reporter. To a lot of journalists in Ukraine, it feels like a return to the bad old days of the 90s. Yeah, now it's currently under the U.S. control, where murder and perpetrators went unpunished. Exactly. Ukraine's friends and backers must continue to highlight these. Journalists in Ukraine are counting on the West to draw attention. Nope, didn't happen. Now it's happening still, and they pretend it's Russia. It's hard to miss this stuff. Now, here, I was going to read this out. I'm going to play part of it. I wanted to jump over. I'm pretty sure I'm going to jump over and do another show after this, so I wanted to play this a little bit. Let me see if I can just grab the video. The point is, he lists off some pretty horrific stuff in this report. Oh, here, let me do this first. Here is the report he's referencing. I mean, this is rough, guys. This is, now here's the point about what they were just saying about torture and rape. This is 2016. This is the OSCE, which was the, where was it right here? Which is the Organization for Security and Cooperation for Europe. And what this is a report specifically on the SBU and human rights violations and torture in Ukraine. War crimes of armed forces and security forces of Ukraine. Torture and inhumane treatment. It says, this is a picture right here, which is really disgusting for people on the podcast. A picture of Alexander Agafonov tortured to death by SBU officers. November 2014. That's post U.S. government control. It's horrific. And under the list, it says they have beaten him to death simply. When they came, they took him away and tortured him. When they brought his body back, the heels were blue. The feet were blue. He had some traces of punctures in his hands. I don't know what they did to him. Punctured him or drove the needles under his nails. There were holes in his hands. Each bone had a hole in it. They tortured him. Like when there was a real war, no one had tortured people the way they tortured him. Exactly. Because the villains are now in control, thanks to the U.S. government and the CIA. Now listen to what he has to say about this, because it's pretty disgusting. I'll do that one next.
Welcome back, boys. So they really, really came out the gates, didn't they? And then we have the horrible testimony from his wife. War crimes of the armed forces and security forces of Ukraine. Second report, in fact, it's interesting to note. We'll scroll down here. This report includes results of interviews from over 200 prisoners released by the Ukrainian side. The prisoners were electrocuted, beaten cruelly, and for multiple days in a row with different objects, iron bars, baseball bats, sticks, rifle butts, bayonet knives, rubber batons. Techniques widely used by the Ukrainian armed forces and security forces include waterboarding, strangling with a banderist garrote. Again, you learn something every day, and other types of strangling. In some cases, prisoners, for the purposes of intimidation, were sent to minefields and run over with military vehicles, which led to their death.
Just so we're not mincing, we're not confused here. This is the SBU of the unit of the Ukrainian government, the security forces, which, by the way, were completely, even at that time, were crossed over in the Azov Battalion, and the entities of these groups were not just, even then, it wasn't the way they painted it. Because remember, the CIA had been building fascism in this country since the 1948, as far as I can tell. That's their documentation that shows they created this fascist entity out of the remnants of the Organization for Ukrainian Nationalists, which, by the way, went all the way up until current times. And like even that point, remember, that's where the Stefan Bandera discussion comes into play, right? This guy was part of the Organization for Ukrainian Nationalists. Mykhailo Lebed, who was the leader of Prologue in New York, was the guy they plucked out of that group, and they made him the leader of this. This guy was an open Italian-level fascist. Like, I say Italian because that's what they align with, the Italian version of fascism. They're extremists. So the point is that that's the same group, the same one they promote, and they celebrate his life, and these are Nazi entities. Mykhailo Lebed was a Nazi war criminal, not a neo-Nazi, a Nazi war criminal. And that's what we're pointing at here. We're pointing at that entity, that group that's been supported and let and put into power specifically since 2014 by the U.S. government. And this is what they did after that. They abused, they tortured, they raped, they murdered, they did horrible things. But now we're pretending like that's not the case. Like, think about the crazy part of this, pointing back at this time as like the distant neo-Nazi history of the Azov Battalion. This is what they were doing. This is what they're downplaying. And then you can have, there's evidence. And by the way, this report goes 2016, guys, right? Don't forget that. This report wasn't just 2014. This was 2016 when this was put out.
A lot of this you're actually going to recognize from alleged torture of Russian prisoners of war. I saw one. I'm not going to talk about it. But yeah, there we are. Point made. The prisoners taken captive by the Ukrainian armed forces and security forces are kept for days at freezing temperatures with no access to food or medical assistance. Excuse me just one moment whilst my illness gets me. Back in the room. An absolute majority of prisoners are put through mock firing squads and suffer death and rape threats to their families.
Jeez.
This information collected by the Foundation for Democracy Studies. What? Foundation for Democracy Studies gives grounds to believe that Ukrainian armed forces, the VSU, the National Guard, and other military units of the Ministry of the Interior of Ukraine, as well as the Security Service of Ukraine, SBU, yep, systematically and on purpose violate Article 3 of the European Convention on Human Rights. That reads, "No one shall be subjected to torture or to inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment." Hold the goddamn phone. These are the guys everyone wants to fast track into the EU.
Right. And now, you please watch this for yourself. It's a good video. The point is pretty clearly that these are the same people that are in power now. The same entities that have been allowed to be driven into power. The same groups that pushed back against Zelensky when he pretended he was in control. These people are dangerous. And they've been grown by the same people that grew the problem in Syria, that grew the problem in Iraq, that grew these problems everywhere in the world to use them against whoever they want to use them against. But it doesn't mean there's not organic versions of these kind of people, but they're using this as the CIA always has. Why don't these things matter? This is on the record from 2016 by a European organization. Can you imagine if a report like this even subjectively came out about Russia right now? It would be huge and never stop being talked about. But this is documented crimes. Nobody cares. Now, here's one other report that simply points out, again, Human Rights Online. Among government actors, the most common perpetrator of arbitrary detention and torture was the SBU. Now, it goes on to say the same thing he said up there. Food, sleep, toilet deprivation, isolation, mock execution, same stuff. And this report is, what was it? I think 2000. Forget what it was. It went up to 2021. In any case, SBU up until 2021. Shocking. Or not really at all, in fact. And finally, to finish off, here is Russia in Canada saying statement by Ambassador Oleg Stepanov on possible WMD provocations in Ukraine. Now, of course, this is what Ukraine is saying about Russia. They're about to use chemical weapons. But listen to what they say. if you're honest and you actually show discernment, you'll consider what they're saying and you'll consider what the Ukraine government's saying. You'll stand back and look at the facts, the history, what they've said, what's on the record, and you'll come to your own conclusions about it. Which, you know, my opinion is that there's plenty of evidence to suggest that the Ukrainian government has already been caught doing this and have already been caught faking it. But I'll leave it to you to think for yourself. Here's what it says. I bring to the attention of the government of Canada, the diplomatic corps in Ottawa, the leading Canadian media outlets and expert community following the issue of concern, as outlined today. The Russian, this is 23rd, Russian Ministry of Defense, during the special briefing, the Russian Federation possesses credible information, which, you know, what it is, ultimately, that could mean whatever they want it to mean. That could mean they think that, they lie, it doesn't matter. Just like with Iran and Bolton, the credible threat was really just their boats moving in their harbor. Like, these governments blow up whatever they want. But they're claiming they've got credible information that the Western security services, under the guidance of the U.S., have been planning and preparing to stage a false flag operation or provocation in Ukraine using biological, chemical, or nuclear WMDs in order to impose responsibility on Russian armed forces. That may include use of chemical and biological weapons to cause civilian toll, acts of sabotage at the Ukrainian facilities in Kiev, Kharkov, involved in the handling of the WMD components, which people like Nuland have already admitted are present in regard to the chemical or the biological parts of it, a provocation at the nuclear power plant, the Zaporozhye, currently under the Russian control, and a strike on the radioactive waste storage facility in these different areas. Well, you know, they're listed right here. So the point is that these are possible areas that could be at risk. The other scenarios are the covert tailored use of WMD at Avastal in Mariupol, or the use of WMDs in towns of Slavyansk or Kramatorsk, which was the train station. Kiev region has all the necessary resources to implement such criminal intent, including nuclear power, radio waste storage infrastructure, military-grade biolaboratories, and a wide range of dangerous pathogens and chemical precursors for producing chemical weapons. That's alarming to think about. That's true. They were forced to admit the biological labs, they've got all the infrastructure, all these things they have access to. Now Biden's sending in some kind of he's sending in non-standard ammunition with no oversight because it's an emergency. Gee, I wonder what they're going to have there now. Doesn't that scare you? The high likelihood of the above-mentioned provocation is also suggested by the recently intensified numerous statements from Western officials preparing public opinion for when those events happen, basically, that it'll be Russia. This is the kind of thing that's so ridiculous. How could they possibly know that Russia was, if it happens, it's going to be them? Couldn't it be them? Like, what about the fact that, let's say Russia was planning that, and they keep saying, if it's going to happen, it's going to be Russia. And then Kiev goes, well, shoot, let's do one, because if it does happen, they're going to blame Russia. Isn't that also possible too? Like, they just don't care about these obvious possibilities. Knowing these people have carried these things out or capable of doing so, it's just childish. We nope, can't do that. Only Russia, no matter what. We warn that shall such acts happen, the full responsibility will be upon the U.S. administration, its closet supporters, and the puppet regime in Kiev that was documented of having committed horrendous crimes against its own civilian population for 8 years, at their own admission, by the way. It's right on Wikipedia. But nobody cares. We remind that the only country in the world, this is where I was thinking about when I said this, that has used nuclear weapons on civilian populations, this is a government country, is the U.S., Hiroshima, Nagasaki. The only country in the world that used chemical weapons, Vietnam. The only country in the world that's used, not destroyed, as provided the Chemical Weapons Convention. That's the point, though. They still use them. They still have them. They just hide it. Bottom line is, though, question this like you question everything. You shouldn't take it at face value. But I agree that there's a lot of evidence that points in this direction. But then the point is, as always, guys, as always, at least as I've seen, the Russian government does their best to present the evidence that they want people to see. And then, as always, they get blocked. It's not, and this is just the ambassadors in their missions, but I believe that that's what we're going to probably see in the UN as well. If they're even able to present in the UN anymore, who knows what kind of blocks are happening. But every time, even with Iran, during that whole discussion, which, by the way, ended up being exactly what we thought, and they just jumped to the next narrative, that they did not have some kind of credible threat. They were lying about what Iran was doing, and that got proven. But the point was, they blocked Iran from coming to the UN to present that evidence to show that they weren't doing it. Why would they do that if they knew that they had the evidence on their side? Russian ambassadors to U.S. says missions work blockaded. This is what's going to happen. Honest entities do not block other people from speaking, even if you know that they're liars. You allow the evidence to speak for itself. Seems to me that's pretty clear who's actually lying in this case. But I'll leave it there for you guys today. Hopefully that reached some people and we got some more information out there every day, nonstop. Now, I'm going to try to jump over and do some of the COVID stuff for those that know that I was going to try to do that. Just keep an eye on the website. I'll post everything like usual. I don't know how long it's going to be, but I'm going to try to jump on and do a little bit of it right now to kind of see how I can get this process going where possibly do separate categories and not to make a 4-hour show and so on, even though this is 2.5. I'll get out of here. I'll see you shortly, guys. As always, question everything. I love you all. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.